The hour 10:15 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order. We have a full agenda today. We have House File 1061, an Erdahl bill. Members, please remove House File 1633. I was able to work with Representative Norton, and that did not change the tax amounts up or down that the state would collect. It had to do with in the charitable gaming side, how this percentages are split at current tax rates. So that was sent to the House floor, and then we will mark up the House File 1219. And I'll make some more announcements when we have a quorum here, but I'd like to welcome Chairman Erdahl to the committee. If you could join us, please, sir. I will move, when I have a quorum, I will move House File 1061. And members, I would really like to stick to the tax portions of this bill. This bill has been through other committees, and it has a ways to go yet. The reason I called this into the tax committee is because of the payment in lieu of taxes portion, which we will be referring to throughout the morning as PILT. We will be going till noon today, and then we will come back after session, the room to be announced if we need to. Hopefully we can get our agenda done by noon. That would be my goal. With that, Chair Erdahl, we do not have a quorum yet. When we do, I'll move your bill. But if you could describe the PILT portions of your bill, sir.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, about a 30-second overview of what the bill is, then I'll get into the PILT section. This is the legacy funding bill. It appropriates $450,430,000 for the biennium. Three of the four categories are funded for 2 years. Outdoor Heritage is for one.
Excuse me. There seems to be a lot of chatter here this morning. There's not chatter allowed in the tax committee. Representative Erdahl. Well, I guess there is chatter allowed.
Well, thank you,
Mr. Representative Erdahl. We'll officially call the tax committee meeting to order. We do have a quorum. Representative Crawford moves the minutes of May 6th. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I will now move House File 1061 be recommended, passed, and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is that correct, Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Okay, to Ways and Means. And again, members, we need to focus like a laser beam in on the payment in lieu of taxes portion. There's a lot of items in this bill that have nothing to do with taxes, so we're going to work it that way. So please continue with your presentation. First of all, regarding the PILT issues, are there any people that want to testify regarding the PILT provisions? I do know that the townships and the counties would like to make a few comments. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify for the PILT provisions in House File 1061 or with concerns other than the townships and the counties? Okay, please present the PILT portion of your bill, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do appreciate you asking the chatter to quiet down, because for a moment I felt like I was teaching my seventh graders again. Not that you guys are like seventh graders.
Just remember, Representative Erdahl, this is a tax committee where everyone is above average.
Thank you.
Okay.
Lands acquired with outdoor heritage funds are subject to state payments in lieu of taxes, PILT, to counties under MS 2010, sections 97A, 061, subdivision 1, and 477A, 12, if they are added to the state's outdoor recreation system. Lands acquired that are held by entities other than the state are not subject to state PILT. Under current law, the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council staff estimates the bill increases state PILT by an estimated $195,000 per annum beginning in fiscal year 2013. Beginning at line 2927 of House File 1061, Section 97A056, the Outdoor Heritage Land Management Account is a change to statute establishing an interest-bearing account in the Special Revenue Fund. That account finances future restoration and enhancement costs associated with lands acquired with outdoor heritage funds and reimburses the general fund for PILT costs associated with state land acquired with the outdoor heritage fund. These provisions apply only to lands purchased with outdoor heritage funds and held by the state. Up to 5.5% of the corpus of this account is annually appropriated to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for these purposes. This amendment is retroactive to July 1st, 2009. In other words, the purpose of this is with land gained by the state through the Outdoor Heritage Legacy Funding, we are intending in this bill to establish an account to manage the land and also to pay the pilt cost.
Any questions for members? Okay, we have some folks who would like to testify regarding the pilt portions. If Mr. Sulem could come down. I'm sorry, gentlemen, we don't have your amendment yet, so we will, before we take testimony from you, I'd like members to see what you are looking at. Are there any amendments that members would have? Ursula Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a couple, and one's being drafted right now, but Mr. Chair, I don't know if you have a lot of testifiers. I think the simplest thing to do would be to delete all the references to pilt and send the bill on its way and not allow the Clean Water Legacy folks to attempt to create a tax bill. So I don't know how you want to proceed here.
That's one idea. We will certainly take that amendment into consideration.
I do have another amendment. Okay. And that is, if the pages can hand it out, I have the A 58, and I think maybe it's appropriate before testimony to just at least take a look at it, if that's okay with you,
that's
Mr. Chair.
That's fine, Mr. Lincheski. If the pages could please pass out the amendment that Person Lincheski has.
Sorry about that for the confusion. Okay. Mr. Chair, I think this is, if I may, this is just an extremely important amendment. I don't know how we could go forward this session without it. I don't think anybody in the legislature could go forward here and adjourn before we've addressed this very, very important issue, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, the amendment, this amendment appropriates from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund to the Historical Society a grant for the City of Chatfield to pre-design, design, construct, furnish, and equip a community center that will, among other uses, house the Chatfield Brass Band Music Lending Library, Mr. Chair, and fund an endowment to defray the ongoing cost of operations. And I think you have great understanding about this project, and maybe, Mr. Chair, you can give us your opinion on this amendment.
Well, thank you for the amendment, Representative Chesky. I think that should about do it. I think that'll cover it. I think we should hear from the author on the A58 amendment to the A58
Mr.
amendment.
Chair, before you do that, is your own staff allowed to testify on the amendment?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, maybe Mr. Michael could. And maybe not.
Well, Mr. Chair, I actually meant Mr. Patrick. Maybe he had a thought on the amendment.
Well, I know he does. I'm sure he would. I'm sure he would. But I think we need to hear from the bill's author.
Okay.
Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lucheski. And I'm afraid I'm going to have to sing from a slightly different tune on this today.
Oh.
And say that while I think this is a very... This may be a very worthwhile project, and I have been to the Chatfield Sheet Music Museum. This will be part of a discussion in conference committee, and as I have pledged to the chairman earlier, I would be in communication with the State Historical Society regarding projects that the chairman has requested.
Well, if this amendment were to pass, I'm sure you'd have a much larger discussion in conference committee.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, but we're trying to earmark in the bill as little as possible.
Well, this would only be one, Mr. Chairman.
and possibly a very worthy one, but let's hold that discussion for later.
So are you against the chairman's project?
No, I'm just against earmarking it at this particular time.
Discussion to the amendment? Person Lincheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, can you recall if both sides of the aisle have had fun with this provision over the years? Has this just been fodder for one side or both?
Just the one.
Just the one?
And it's the one that it shouldn't be fodder for.
Mr. Chair, do you think you could get your side of the aisle bipartisanly to support this amendment here today?
I think we'll soon find out.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if you ever formally accepted my motion, but I'll temporarily withdraw the motion, knowing that this is a critical piece before adjournment, and I appreciate you letting me take the time to discuss it here today.
Well, thank you. I think it's a fine amendment. We'll hopefully bring it up later. Okay, we have an amendment. Why don't we, Chair Erdahl, you don't have any amendments that you would like right now? So the bill's in the order you would like it at this point?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I do have another amendment.
I missed one.
Maybe we could get into that, and then pages will be passing out the items that the townships and the counties are looking at here, and I want to have a brief discussion on that. We have an A57 amendment. Whose would that be? Representative Lewin? Okay.
That is my amendment, Mr. Chair.
If you could please describe your amendment. Representative Lewin moves the H1061A57 amendment. Could you please describe your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment basically would rebalance, if you will, the money going to the parks and trails for between the metro and outstate projects. And I know there's been some legislation introduced in this arena by Representative McFarland, and I know that Chairman Erdahl has done a lot of discussion and work with this as well. But just to, you know, again, as a member from the metro area, and that there's concern that there's balance in this sales tax dollars going to parks in the metropolitan area as well. You know, what I'm proposing is that this would go to basically a 42% rebalance, and then 16%, as I understand it, is for a competitive grant program that parks compete for. So, you know, that money would certainly be open for all parks and that to bid for and that. But again, you know, a great deal of the sales tax money comes from the metro area. 64% of the sales tax money is generated from the metro area. We're 54% of the state's population. We're certainly not trying to take more than our fair share, but, you know, it is a concern that, you know, parks, especially in a metro area where people are living perhaps more compactly, and that being able to connect with the outdoors is a concern. And I think that was part of the reason that the sales tax was supported as well by many of the voters in the metropolitan area. So that is the purpose of my amendment.
Thank you, Representative Lewin. And again, members, I really wanted to keep this focus on the PILT issues, the PILT areas, not get into other work that the committees have done in either policy committees or finance committees. But, you know, I'd like a new Cadillac. That doesn't mean I get one. So I guess I could have one. Discussion to the amendment. So, again, this one does not directly go to the PILT issue, but there are no germaneness issues in committee. I realize that, so we'll discuss the amendment. Questions? Representative Knuth?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to speak in favor of the amendment. I didn't.
Certainly. Amendments before us.
And I thank Representative Lewin for offering it. I think, members, if you look at the split in the bill, the parks, in terms of usage, it's way over half the usage is people in metro parks, and the top used parks are in metro parks. And if you look at the state parks, they are used by people around Minnesota, but a lot more of that money goes to outstate parks, since there's only a few state parks in the metro area. And there's still plenty of money, I think, for competitive grants, much of which goes to the outstate areas, and I think this does a little work in balancing the whole bill overall, and so I would ask members to support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Knuth. Representative Rukavina?
Oh, Mr. Chair, thank you. So, Representative Knuth, Representative Lewin, let me just get the logic. So, the state DNR gets 44% of the money, the metro parks get 44% of the money, and the rural and regional parks in greater Minnesota have to compete with the metro parks to get 16% of the money, and that's rationalization that's fair. Is that my Is that Representative Knuth, if you'd yield, is that your rational
question, Representative Knuth?
Rationalization for a Rhodes Scholar?
Representative Rickovina, not a Rhodes Scholar. I wouldn't be paying my debt still if I was. Mr. Chair, Representative Rickovina, I think if you look at the overall bill, I would say it does quite well. And if you look at park usage and the percentages of attendance in metro parks versus state parks and outstate parks, you'll be it's over half of the users are in the metro area, and it's even with the 42-42-16, it's slightly less for the state parks as well as the metro parks than it was in the last legacy bill, 1% less for each. And I think looking at where park usage is, where the sales tax is generated, and the parks that have plans moving forward, I think this amendment makes a lot of sense.
Representative Rickovina?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know how much sense it makes. The state parks belong to all the people of the state. That's like, you know, the rationalization when we have a bonding bill is that the University of Minnesota belongs to all the people of the state, so you can't count that as just the, you know, metro area. But now we have the opposite rationalization. Representative Loon, 62% of the sales tax is paid in Minnesota, or excuse me, in the metro area. You said, is that correct, or is 64?
64% is the information. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loon, Mr. Chair. So when my constituents come down and represent, well, from all over, represent Kiffmeyer, we'll look at Crawford, wherever, when they come down to the metro area to go to the University Hospital or a Twins game or a Vikings game or to the Mall of America, that counts then towards the metro paying the sales tax. I think actually with my per diem I pay more sales tax than most people at the table because I'm out every night, but that's a whole other issue.
Okay, let's do this. Maybe I've got quite a list here, which is fine. And again, just an announcement to members. We're on, I've moved House File 1061, the Erdahl Bill, and I just want to look at the agenda here for a second. Please cross out House File 1633, the Norton Bill. That was an issue that I conferred with Representative Lomachesky and Representative Marquardt on and Mr. Michael. That does not change a tax level or percentage. What it did was it changed the gross profit percentages within currently collected money. So that was moved from, I think it was State Government Finance or someplace to the House floor. So we didn't need to see that. And then we'll get into House File 1219. And we're good till noon, and then we've got a long floor session. Then we'll come back afterwards if we need to wrap up House File 1219. Representative Erdahl, just a few, I'll get to Deputy Kiffmeyer Gottwell, but a few comments on the Loon Amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, this amendment failed in my legacy division committee. It failed in the environment committee, and there are great arguments on both sides. I mean, some of you who are on these other committees have heard me say this, and we could frankly debate this all day and maybe not convince anyone. There are, as I said, great arguments on either side that can and will be made. However, in putting together this bill, we have on one side a 37-37-26 split. We have on
26
exclusive by the Senate. On the other side, the 42-42-16, and what I have tried to do is to go 40-40-20, which is basically in the middle, my goal being to get everyone upset with that position, which I've managed to do. The fact is that if we were to do the position that is being offered in this amendment, it would basically, in the view of many in rural Minnesota, basically roll over them on this issue. And I think that would be a mistake, and if I were to go the other way, I would have the same impact with those living in the suburban areas. That is not my goal. My goal is to try to do a fair approach down the middle at 40-40-20. I think it's important to this bill to stay there.
You have a gentleman would like to make a few comments before we get into more questions.
Mr. Chairman, member Dan Larson representing two organizations today, Greater Minnesota Park and Trail Coalition and Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, both of which would oppose respectfully the Loon Amendment. Based on the notion of balance, we have a different interpretation, as you might expect. The organization, let's take it back. I think a little context, I'll be brief, but a little context is necessary here. Go back to this is our second funding cycle on Park and Trail Legacy. The first funding cycle was essentially a split a little different than this. 43% went to exclusively to the DNR, 43% exclusively to Metro Parks, and then 14% that the remaining 80 counties that were outside the 7-county metro area were allowed to compete for the remaining 14% of the total park and trail dollars. So in effect, this amendment would, so there was concerns, frustration, a lot of heartburn on the greater Minnesota side about fairness and balance. 20% of that 14% went to metro counties. So in effect, you had 80% of the 40%, throwing a lot of numbers out, that went to those 80 counties. Over the past 8 years, we're an embryonic organization. We're not set up, but we've got a vision to be set up. We're not set up currently, but we're getting there to carry out what the Park and Trail Legacy Plan, 25-year plan calls for, and that is a comprehensive statewide system of parks and trails. Statewide. Being able to compete for the 14% with Metro that's left after DNR receives 43% exclusive, and 42% exclusive, and Metro 42% exclusive is not going to get the job done. We will not be able to carry out the goals of the plan. So, in effect, what this amendment would do would be to ratify that again, not one dime, not one nickel would be guaranteed for Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails out of the legacy plan. So, we'll take a little exception, respectfully, to the balance question. What we tried to do, a whole group came about because on the previous funding cycle, Greater Minnesota Park and Trail Coalition, because they recognized if you're not going to have a seat at the table, you're going to get waxed. And that's what the group was hoping to do this year. This is not the first go-around with this amendment, but we've been able to fight it off a couple of times in the Senate too, but at any rate, as far as a couple of the provisions, 64% of the tax base is generated in the metro area. I think Representative Rupavina hit on it. A lot of rural people come into the metro, a lot of businesses in the rural areas buy product from companies in the metro area. So we think that number is skewed. About 50% of the people that go to state parks are from the metro area. And state parks are state parks. This is a regional park fund to set up and establish regional parks and trails. State parks are on their own. They get 43% exclusive. So okay. Thank you for your comment or your interest.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. We'll go some questions. Again, members, we're getting a bit of far afield here with an amendment that has nothing to do with HILT, but we will continue the discussion. Representative Depke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity just to support Representative Loon and also Representative Knuth's comments. It's my understanding that the legacy plan acknowledged that we needed greater investment in areas projected to grow rapidly in the next 25 years. Just a couple of facts that I think are going to be important, particularly in the Lake Minnetonka area. We have the Dakota Trail, which has done a tremendous amount of good in spurring on small businesses in our communities, and small restaurants, shops, and so forth along the way has really generated much more health to those small businesses. We have over 20 miles of trails on the Dakota Trail. Just one, you should be aware that 390,000 people use that Dakota Trail last summer alone. It is absolutely a booming area and has done wonders for that area. In addition to that, Lake Minnetonka, which is not part of the Parks and Trails, but the lake of Lake Minnetonka, we had over 250 people visiting, 1,000 people visiting that lake last year. So I wholly support the 42-42-16. That was the what the legacy people did last year, and I support Representative Loon's bill.
Mr. Chair, clarification?
No, I'll put you on the list. Representative Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was answered in regards to what occurred in 09-10, and I think it is really, really important, in particular in the funding for this year, that we have what's in the current bill, because I think rural Minnesota and greater Minnesota, 80 counties there, definitely need the balance between last time, which was heavily tilted metro, and this time we're just trying to have parity. So while I appreciate the metro area and what you're, you got to fight for your areas, but so do we. And it was kind of tough last time at really seeing that there wasn't the kind of distribution that I really thought was deserved. So I support the bill in its original version. Thank you.
Representative Gowalt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Rick Covina, you and I are on the same page on this one.
I
think we ought to alert the media about that. Exactly. I just want you to consider it in that light. But, Mr. Chair, you know, this goes back historically a long way. Last year's funding, and Representative Kiffmeyer got at it a little bit, the metro area counties got not only a direct appropriation, but they also had the opportunity to go after the grants that the rest of us in greater Minnesota had to go after for scraps. Many years ago, you people all know Representative Larry Hawes, Representative Joe Opatz, who happens to be around the halls here today if you happen to run into him, former Representative Joe Opatz, worked very hard because they were told the reason that greater Minnesota communities did not get more funding for their parks was that they did not have regional park plans. The metro area did. And so our area, St. Cloud, metro area, put together a very good park plan, a regional park plan, with the intent of saying, okay, we've done our homework, we've got a plan in place, now state, please help us out, be fair, give us some revenue. And to this day, we still don't have state dollars going into that. And it's remarkable now with this land and legacy dollar money flowing that we still want to kind of stick it to greater Minnesota in these terms. The state parks are utilized by everybody around the state. In fact, I would argue the people who use the state parks most are actually the people from the metro area. So to argue that those are our regional parks, I think, is a bit misleading. The truth is greater Minnesota has been unfairly treated in terms of parks funding from the state for a very long time, and it's time to have some parity. I would encourage members to vote no on the Loon Amendment and keep the balance the way that it is in the bill.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would encourage members to oppose the amendment. Most of the figures are right in front of you. Minnesota generated sales tax 64% in the metro. Well, that means that 36% are generated in outstate Minnesota. Population, 46% of Minnesota is outstate. Also, if you think about it, the greater geographic areas are obviously in outstate Minnesota. So we're not asking for any of those figures. I think Representative Erdahl has done a tremendous job in balancing all the interests, and As other people have said, Representative Rukavina, these are state parks, so I would urge you not to support the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Rukavina?
Well, Mr. Chair, just so I understand again, Representative Bloom, since it's in dollars, your amendment changes the percentages to what again?
Representative Bloom?
Mr. Chair, 42, 42, 16.
Okay, 42, 42, 16. As has been discussed here with Representative Gottwald, Representative Crawford, and others, you know, the state parks belong to everyone, and I would venture to say that if you looked at usage and if there was a way to measure it, it's probably people from out of the state and the metro area that use those parks more than the local people. But be that as it may, Representative Lewin, why don't we just then take your amendment and give the 16% to the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks as a compromise, and then you can't come and take that money, too. Would you accept that as a friendly amendment?
Representative Lewin?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the amendment?
Representative Rukavina?
I said, would you accept as a friendly amendment then that 42% go to the DNR, 42% to the metro area, and 16% goes to just Greater Minnesota Regional Parks with no approach from the metro area to go after that money also? Would that be a good compromise for the committee?
Representative Lewin?
Well, actually, I'd like to hear from Chairman Erdahl if you would have an opinion on that.
And, Mr. Chair, finally, Representative Depke, you know, years ago, my buddy was going with a young lady who came to UMD from Lake Minnetonka, and we went down to visit Lake Minnetonka, and we couldn't get on the lake because it was all privately owned, so I'm glad to hear now that the public can get on Lake Minnetonka.
It's been a public lake for a long time.
I'm an old man, Representative. This was 40 years ago.
Well, see, we are doing the right thing, Guy. I apologize.
Representative Davids, now you can get on Lake Minnetonka.
Okay.
And we got to help those poor people out down there on Lake Minnetonka.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Erdahl.
I believe Representative Loon asked my opinion on something. First of all, even under the 40-40-20, more money, because of the increased sales tax, was going into each of the accounts. So it's not that changing the percentage was less actual dollars, just to clear that up. But also, I would accept the 42-42-16 exclusive to the grant program.
You know, members, we're getting into areas that we have not studied or heard testimony on, but we're the tax committee. We can do whatever we want. We'll hold that thought. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since we are being asked to take a vote, I want to just make sure I get my facts straight. On the annual user visits, I think this is a question for Representative Erdahl, maybe not. But those annual user visits, is that a... I don't know how visits are calculated. Is that like visit hours or visit days? If somebody goes to a state park and gets a campsite for a week, is that one visit as compared to somebody who happens to jump on a bike path for a mile or two? How do we know how to compare these visits and this usage statistic here?
Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Downey, I did not prepare this. Mr. Rice, I believe, is... and Mr. Peterson did, so they could best answer that question.
Could we get someone down here to answer the Downey question, please? You could state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members Kirk Peterson, Rice, Michaels, and Wall for representing the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. The numbers on the sheet are taken, the user statistics are taken from the Met Council annual user survey, and I'm not sure if Arnie Stepford from the Met Council was here, but every year they do a statistical analysis of park users. They have people that go out and count users at different times of day in different parks at different seasons and monitor the people that go, and from that they have a formula that they extract on the number of user visits every year, and this is from the most recent park user survey. It's if you want to see the actual methodology, it's on their website, or if somebody from the Met Council is here, Todd. You can probably explain it better.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that explains the Metro Regional Park. So that's an observation of a person in a park at a point in time, and we don't really know how long they were there or what the extent of their usage was. But for the state parks, do we know those 9 million visits? Is that just entering a park and then before you leave, or how, does anybody know how those visits are counted?
We have a gentleman that come down.
Do that better, Mr. Chairman.
And if people who want to testify regarding PILT could line up. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name for the record is Forrest Bowe. I'm the deputy director of the DNR's Parks and Trails Division.
To the Downey question.
To the Downey question, we have about 9.5 million annual day visitors, and these are folks that come to our park for a day. That could be up to an hour or up to a full day. We also have about 1 million overnight guests at our state parks, and so we have very good numbers with respect to those overnight guests. People register for a campsite. They tell us how many people are at the campsite that particular day. Excuse me. And the daily visitors are more calculated as an average per car. 2.1 persons per vehicle that come into our parks.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just a little unclear then, I think, in terms of if we're really trying to gauge usage and assume that visits are the appropriate measure of usage, I'm not sure that's the best comparison. It's a little hard to say which ones get used the most based on this chart. And then if I could, Mr. Chair, another follow-up question for Representative Erdahl, maybe. Could somebody explain to me what all the funding sources are for the Metro Regional Parks? I don't need the nuclear submarine, but that $86 million, where in general does that come from? What are the major funding sources and dollars in that?
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Downey, Mr. Steffrud is here. I think he could. You could speak to that.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Steve Sullivan. I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation for Dakota County. Specific to the question, 90% of the operational funds for the Metro Regional Parks are derived through tax. Through local taxes, as well as about 10% of that, 10 to 15% is through revenues. We also receive approximately 60% of our capital improvement funding through state bonding, with 40% being derived through again, local taxes through Met Council bonding. And then the third source of funding is the source that we're dealing with today, which is the Parks and Trails funding, in which we've had the one-year biennium appropriation, which I might mention. The 43% from 2010 to 2011, it truly did result in a 50-50 split between Greater Minnesota and the metro area.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to do some basic math. So out of the $86 million under the Loon Amendment, $16 million would come from the legacy funds. The remaining $70 million, then, is that 90-10 split between tax and revenues?
Sir?
And Mr. Chair, the specific question is there additional general fund support to the regional trails outside of the, or other state support outside of the legacy funding? Maybe that's the real question I was getting at.
Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you know, I'm sorry, I don't have the benefit of that information. If it relates to it as operational and maintenance funds, is it specific to that, representative? If it is, then in that case, it would be derived through local taxes. That 90%.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm fine. Thank you.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't sit on any of the committees that deal with this, and you may point out that I still don't. Even though we're discussing it here. But I'm trying to follow, and I'm wondering if Representative Loon can help me in terms of the history. The gentleman from the Greater Minnesota Park and Trail Association, whatever the name was, I apologize if I don't have that quite right. First funding round of the legacy money, 43% went to the DNR for state parks. 43% stayed in the metro area, was for the metro area, for the regional parks. 14%, was competitive grants, 80% of which went to Greater Minnesota. So I can only think of one state park in the metro, Fort Snelling.
There's three.
There's three? Okay. So I don't know if this is a question for you, Representative Loon. It's trivia day. How many state parks do we have? 72. Okay.
I think so.
So
thank you, Representative Loon.
So
73.
Okay. Overwhelmingly, the 43%, is it correct then, Representative Loon, that overwhelmingly of the 43% that went to the DNR and the state parks, that went to Greater Minnesota because only three of the 72 state parks are in the metro?
That's correct.
Okay, so we're looking at, and then we're at 80% of the 14 going to Greater Minnesota. We've got 12.8% of the money there, so we're looking at over 50% of the money in the first round of legacy going to Greater Minnesota between the state parks and the metro parks. Am I right? Or the state parks and the 14%. Am I right on that, Representative Loon?
Representative Abney, I believe your math is correct on
okay.
that.
Okay. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Loon. Because then what I'm looking at is 90-some percent of the state parks are in Greater Minnesota. 43% of the money goes there. 12.8% more money goes to Greater Minnesota. And I'm fine with that. Don't misunderstand. I'm just trying to do the math here. While they, so 50-some percent, low 50s, of the money goes to Greater Minnesota, while 18% of the usage is at those parks. And I'm concerned, the legislature's really good at buying things and building things, and really bad at maintaining things. And being a fiscal conservative... I paused for the laughter. I paused for the laughter. Come on. I was expecting more, Representative Gottwald. You're right. But, I mean, when I look at my car, it makes more sense to maintain it than it does to go out every few years and buy a new car. Long term, it's cheaper to do that. And so if we've got 81% of the usage, the demand on the parks, the wear and tear on parks and trails and all of that happening in the metro, I don't think that 81% of the money should go there, but I do think that we should respond to the long-term maintenance needs and assure what we're supposed to do with Legacy Amendment, which is the next generation has the same opportunities to access Minnesota's outdoors as we do today. And then to Representative Rukavina, I'm sure you are. You argued that, well, when Greater Minnesota folks come to the metro, they create sales tax revenue. And that's true. When metro folks go to Greater Minnesota, we also generate sales tax revenue.
When is that? When's the last time you've been outside?
Say, let's go through the chair here, please. Representative Dabney has the floor.
Okay. Last point. When we did the Hennepin County Stadium, when we did the Twins Stadium, what staff determined at that point was, while Greater Minnesota folks were arguing everybody's paying for the stadium, the fact of the matter was 94% of the sales tax money was going to come from Hennepin County residents. So it's really clear that it's the metro that's making the contributions here and the demand on the services. I would like to see the Loon Amendment go forward to maintain the parks and trails that we have responsibly. Thank you.
Okay, Wardlow, Knuth, Rukavina, Gottwald, Drazkowski, and then we'll get to the issue the tax committee should be looking at. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make this brief. Thank you, Representative Loon, for bringing this amendment forward. I think it goes a long way to rebalancing things, and I think Representative Devney is making a lot of sense as a fiscal conservative. You know, it's finding myself agreeing with you here. In fact, if we look at the data we have here, and assuming that annual user visits is a rough estimate, roughly comparable day visits at metro regional parks versus state parks and not metro regional parks. If you think about who we're preserving these parks for and maintenance of the parks, and then look at the annual user visits, you can actually, in the acreage, think about it in terms of annual user visits per acre. That is kind of park traffic density. So if you divide annual user visits by the number of acres in each category, you see that state parks, 69 of which are out state. I get 37.6 annual visits per acre. Metro regional parks get 748 annual visits per acre. And non-metro regional parks get 10.3 visits per acre, out of a total of approximately 796 or so annual acre or visits per acre. So as a measure of density and where we need to send money to dedicate money to preserve our cultural and parks and trails heritage and keep up existing parks, I think this amendment makes quite a bit of sense. And thank you, Representative Lewin, and I'll be voting for it and encourage members to do the same.
Representative Knuth?
Yes.
Representative Rukavina?
Well, Mr. Chair, I make a motion we sell the 70 state parks in rural Minnesota to Iowa, move the Viking Stadium to Cloquet, and then you can move Mille Lacs Lake down to the metro area. You know, okay, let's go with it. You know, because, Mr. Chair, it's ridiculous. Representative Dabney, it's like saying then let's do the same thing with the University of Minnesota. How much of the University of Minnesota's budget is spent on the Twin Cities campus versus Duluth, Morris, and Crookston? So let's do the same thing if we want to do it population-wise. But Representative Loon, back to my original question, if you would accept as a friendly amendment, 42, 42, and 16.
Are you
with no? I'm offering this amendment with no ability of the metro area to go after the 16.
Representative Rukavina, where does that fit in the amendment? What lines are we looking at here?
I don't know. I guess I would just amend the amendment to say that 42% of the money for parks goes to the DNR, 42% to the metro area, and 16% to Greater Minnesota parks.
Okay. Make a point. If we have an amendment before us, but staff is going to have to do a little work on this. So I'm going to temporarily lay over this amendment. We will get back to it. First of all, Representative Loon, your comments to the Rukavina amendment. So I'm going to bring it back here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, you know, I'm sorry, Representative Rukavina, but I wouldn't accept it as a friendly amendment. If you want to pursue having it worked up, obviously that's you're right. But I'm not prepared to do that at this point.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Rukavina? All right, Representative Berto, why don't you make some comments? Mr. Rukavina still has the floor.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina?
Loon was concerned about the division of the monies. I thought she might accept that as a friendly amendment. If she doesn't, I'm not going to pursue it anymore, I guess.
Okay.
We'll just have the battle on the floor for a couple of hours. A
couple days. Representative Gottwald.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Oh, Representative Berdahl.
In discussion with the gentleman up here, one representing the Greater Minnesota, one the metropolitan area, and myself, we are respectfully asking Representative Loon to withdraw this amendment because through our conversations, I think that we are close to reaching an agreement between the groups. And so I'm just asking to withdraw the amendment so that we have two more stops at least before it goes to conference committee. And this would be helpful.
Representative Loon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Lincheski looked like she wanted to say something to that point, but I would be amenable to that if Chairman Erdahl is indicating that there may be some an agreement which would adjust the allocation in the bill. Is that correct,
Mr. Chairman? Representative Loon, I believe that we are moving close to an agreement that would be satisfactory.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would be amenable to that.
Are you withdrawing the amendment?
Yes, I will withdraw the amendment at this point.
Representative Loon withdraws the A57 amendment. Now, to the issue at hand, we have two gentlemen that would like to come down and visit briefly. Do we have it? Okay, I will move the A60 amendment. Chairman Erdahl, I'm moving the amendment, but I'm going to withdraw it after we've had the testimony because this is another work in progress. We have the Township Association and the AMC, the county folks with us, would like to visit a little bit about the issue we're here to talk about today. So, Mr. Matthews, would you like to start, or Mr. Sulem? Just state your name for the record and who you represent, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Sulem, General Counsel with the Minnesota Association of Townships.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Matthews and I are here to discuss Representative McNamara's provision that is Section 4, beginning at the bottom of page 29. I think I'm working from the proper second engrossment. And it's an attempt to deal with an issue that is very important to counties and townships, and that is, as more and more land is acquired by the state, how do we offset the cost of the local units of government? How do we pay for the lost property tax and the lost property tax base? And we've been very appreciative of Representative Erdahl's and Representative McNamara's efforts to keep something in this bill, keep the discussion alive as to how do we address it. I believe you now have an amendment before you for the discussion of language that the counties and townships have been working on. It's actually a concept that started about 2 years ago with Representative Wagenius and Representative Murphy and Representative Dill when this issue started, and it's finally getting to the point where we think it's ready for prime time. And rather than creating a statewide trust account, as Representative McNamara's provision would do, that takes a set amount of the legacy funds and moves them over to this trust account to pay for a number of things, when it comes to the PILT side of it, our proposal is a little more detailed to say, look, it's an acquisition cost. Part of the acquisition of land includes paying the property tax. You and I do that when we buy any property. On the closing documents, there's a provision that you have to have settled up the taxes. So there's an acquisition fee looking at the impact of the local governments. It would be an upfront one-time fee that would then be invested in a trust. Mr. Matthews will walk you through the details, the interests of which then would make the local governments whole. And we believe, we've been working very closely with a number of the groups that have supported the legacy amendment from the start. They are very receptive to this concept. Mr. Tuma has offered a few suggestions that he thinks would help make it even tighter. I'll be meeting with him after this hearing. But we've heard from groups like the Deer Hunters Association, the Fish and Outdoor group that Mr. Ness represents. And they have all reported that they are very receptive and think that we're going down the right track here. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Matthews to kind of walk through the details, and then we'll be available for questions.
Welcome, committee, sir. Can you state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir, and then provide a brief testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. And as Mr. Sulem described, effectively what we're asking is that there be a fee assessed on the acquisition of the land that could be deposited in an irrevocable trust set aside specifically to offset the impact on the local governments. The reason why we're looking at a trust-type model is we're trying to find a way to eliminate any impact on the general fund or ongoing liabilities to the state as land is acquired. I think any of you who have dealt with the PILT issue this year, whether it's through the tax bill or others, recognize that it's a growing liability as land prices increase, as other things grow, and as the number of acres grow. It's going to be a greater and greater cost to the state. This is a model that we think, as we work with those interested to flesh out the details, could potentially work. Our counties understand that once it was set up, they'd basically be restricted to receiving payments based upon the growth in the trust, and there would be up years and down years, but we think the formula we've laid out here would seed that trust with an adequate amount of principal. The plan is that it would be invested through the State Board of Investment, similar to other funds that we've set up in the past, whether it's for pensions or it's for the OPEB, the other post-employment benefits that this committee dealt with some years ago. And so we do believe, again, that the key to this is that the trust be seated adequately, and then that we restrict the payments so that the principal itself cannot be eroded over time. Will this be a better or worse deal for counties 30 years from now? We're not sure, but what we do know is it guarantees us some certainty that we won't be at the whims of one legislature to the next as far as what that payment is. And so that's why we're interested in this. And again, we're working with a number of folks to try and polish this up and get it ready for prime time, but we wanted to put it before the committee for informational purposes.
Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I also want to point out that the reason we're looking at doing it in this manner is that we have a clear distinction that we are not trying to replace PILT payments in the sense of the current funding and for the current lands. This is very clearly a new program for the new acquisitions, and so in that way, we're trying to make sure that it's clear. We're not trying to just take money out of PILT and backfill it with the legacy funds. This is additional dollars for a new program dealing with new lands, and that's a critical thing to understand on this proposal.
Chairman Erdahl, your thoughts?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's certainly worth discussion and worth working on some more, and be glad to consider that in more detail as we go through the process.
Any questions for the gentleman at the table? Okay, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know if it's to the testifiers, but since they have spent a lot of time looking at this, we got a legislative auditor report that we spent some time with that showed PILT has got real problems. And some places are making out like bandits and getting more money than they would have ever collected in its previous use. And some people are maybe not getting enough. And it seems to me that this proposal would sort of continue that potentially on. And it continues the inequities in the system, in that most of the metro parks were paid for and the land bought with property taxes and are still operated with property taxes, and they get no PILT. And that now we would create a new dedicated fund that wouldn't be connected to it. And until we fix PILT, and I'm not saying, you know, good or bad or otherwise, we still shouldn't have, some communities are making more than they would get if the land had not been acquired by the state. And we should fix that before we start doing anything more with creating permanent endowments and figuring these things out. And so I just don't think this is an issue that should be dealt with through the legacy bill at this point in time.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Matthews.
Just to that point, you know, one of the issues, we would agree with your assessment. There's a lot of questions around the PILT program and whether it's adequate or inadequate, and it seems that different counties have different perspectives and there's different formulas. We believe that this is something we need to address in the front end of the legacy dollars so that there is clear purpose for the dollars as they're being spent. And the formula that we've derived basically pegs it to the property taxes that were being collected at the time the property was acquired. And that way we feel it's a lot more transparent as to what the amount is. And frankly, the county is going to have to, again, live within the growth of the trust as over time if they're going to see any increases in those payments. And they may not see increases. And again, you know, with PILT over time, that has grown for various reasons. And there's other folks in the room that have a lot greater history than I do. But I think to leave that behind is just going to put us in the same boat we're already in with PILT. We believe that if we can address the legacy dollars and find a solution that works, that may give us some guidance to address the long-term issues with PILT. And I think that there is some language floating around the legislature to direct a study on the existing PILT program to try and find some solutions on that end.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we ought to deal with PILT first, and I think there's some real inequity in who gets it and who doesn't and how much, and we're just creating permanent trust funds that, you know, I mean, most areas, when they really wanted a park, they offered up land, and they were glad to get it, and, you know, I know there's different issues with this. It's much more complicated, and if we want to spend time over the interim or next year dealing with this, I'm willing to wade into those waters, but I don't think it's appropriate for us to set up a new trust fund at this point in time dealing with that when we haven't resolved the basic issues.
Again, Representative Loeffler, I will be pulling the amendment after some discussion. This is not for a vote today, so your point's well taken. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then my questions might be pointless because I just want to be understanding what I might be voting on. But if we're not going to, is that we won't
we're
be voting?
We're not voting on this today.
I'll hold my questions then,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lucchesi.
Mr. Chair, you said you're pulling this amendment, but are you? Can we go to other amendments,
absolutely,
or are you intending to not vote on?
There's one really good one left that I know of.
Is that mine?
No, it's about the southern part of the state.
Oh, okay. I already did one. Chatfield.
That's the one.
Oh, okay.
Representative Chesley.
Well, Mr. Chair, if it's appropriate, I'd like to move the handwritten amendment.
Okay, I will withdraw. Is there any other questions quickly for the amendment we're not voting on?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Solem.
If I may just make one additional comment to Representative Loeffler. As the representative of the group that probably is right now getting the most shorted on the PILT based on the legislative audit report, our membership really does feel that it's important to try to address this issue now so we don't make the PILT problem worse for the existing lands, and that we do definitely need to still have the study and to very earnestly address the concerns that you have properly raised. But we really do feel that by taking this approach, we still have to address the problem, but we're addressing a fixed problem rather than an enhanced problem by going this route. I also want to point out one other thing that this amendment does that PILT does not do, and that is that it would allow cities to be eligible. If at some point legacy funds are used to acquire land within city limits, this provision will allow them to be reimbursed and made whole, where under the existing law, they would not be eligible for any payment. So I just wanted to point that out, that this helps try to get towards more equity.
Thank you. I withdraw the A60 amendment. Representative Lencheski moves the handwritten amendment that you should have before you. Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this amendment, as I understand it, I asked Ms. Dalton to write it when I came in the room, would just delete the PILT part of this bill and leave it right here in the tax committee where it belongs and allow the bill to move on its way. And if I may speak to it further, you know,
certainly.
listening to Representative Loon, Representative Downey, you know, on the earlier portion and now thinking about this, you know, this is not it. The Clean Water Legacy Bill was never, and I was an opponent, okay, but whether you're for it or against, nobody thought the Clean Water Legacy money was for property taxes. And that's what PILT is. And secondarily, it's a tax issue and doesn't belong in this bill. It belongs in the purview of the chair who's sitting in this room right here. And if the chair of this committee and the majority of this committee think that PILT should be addressed because it's a property tax issue, it should get addressed by this committee, not by the Clean Water Legacy Group. I heard, you know, Ms. Representative Erdahl say, you know, there's more stops and we have more time to work on this. They're not the people who are supposed to work on this. The tax committee is supposed to work on this. This is a tax provision. That's what PILT is. The account for PILT is in the hands of this chair and Chair Runbeck. And this is not an issue for Clean Water Legacy. But even if you think that's where it belongs, remember, 64.8% of the sales tax to pay for the Clean Water Legacy is raised in the metro. And I want to remind folks that the metro pays for its property taxes. It doesn't get PILT for this clean water stuff. You know, we have the Met Council, which is only metro residents pay those property taxes. And as you heard in Representative Downey, he read it right in there. 90% of the money for what we do comes off our property tax. And nobody gives Representative Mack and Representative Downey and Representative Wardlow and Representative Dabney and myself and other Representative Bills and Biskins, we don't get PILT for our residents paying property taxes. So members, this, you know, if we want to decide that a thing we should do with Clean Water Legacy is to start doing this, it's the tax committee who should decide this. We're going to end up, if this goes along in here, with the Clean Water Legacy change on the floor, Mr. Chair, and we're going to have a tax bill day again. Because I think it's great that this bill made it here, and I hope members will just, no matter how they feel, vote for the amendment to strip the PILT out, and Representative Erdahl's bill can move on its way. But that is a tax provision. It doesn't belong in that bill. This is another attempt to work around the tax committee and the chair of this committee to do tax policy. We have a tax omnibus bill still on the calendar today, the tax policy bill. We have an omnibus tax bill and conference committee. There may be more. Those are the places that PILT changes are carried, whether it's a formula, whether it's what Representative Erdahl's got in his bill. Doesn't matter. That's not the tax bill. That provision should be removed, and members of this committee can live to fight another day on this issue. I'm simply saying in this amendment, Mr. Chair, that we're going to strike the PILT argument completely, and there's still plenty of time this session. In fact, I just heard people talking about working on it even next year. But, Mr. Chair, you can pass any changes you want to PILT going forward. But the Clean Water Legacy Committee does not hold the PILT accounts in the Minnesota legislature. And whether they're the elected folks who are working on this or the unelected people who were appointed, that Clean Water Legacy Amendment was never contemplated by the voters ever to be about property taxes. And you know, a whole bunch of us bipartisanly opposed it and fought it, encouraged our colleagues, our voters to vote no, but they passed it anyhow. But you can talk about, was that for clean water, hunting, was it for fishing, was it for arts, was it for culture, historical stuff? Nowhere did anyone say, oh, it's for property tax relief. That, by the way, now, 65% gets paid by the metro to give property tax relief to the non-metro. So, Mr. Chair, this is not the vehicle for this discussion on PILT. PILT is a complicated issue that this committee is best suited to decide on, bipartisanly going forward, but it should not be carried by the Clean Water Legacy folks. That is not the place for a tax provision.
Okay. Where's the author of the bill? Representative Rookman, can you see if he fell? Oh, Representative McNamara, do you know where Erdahl is? Oh. I wanted you to check under the table there. I wasn't sure.
Mr. Chairman,
Chair Erdahl.
Representative McNamara can speak to this.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Representative Lencheski for bringing the issue up. This provision and this part of the Representative Erdahl, those are my glasses.
I was trying to figure that out.
Probably the same. Does it work? Okay, all right.
$1 at dollar store.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I can... You've heard some testimony from the county and townships about the importance. Representative Lencheski brought up, her and I were on different sides of this issue in 2007, 2008 when we were having this discussion. I was a strong supporter of letting the voters decide. The voters decided in 2008 by an overwhelming majority. More people voted for these provisions than voted for President Obama. We have this before us now, and included in those provisions was the thought by a lot of people that we would, in the right opportunities, buy new land in the state of Minnesota to protect, enhance, and restore. The reality, when we buy this new land in the state of Minnesota, there's obligations and costs involved with that. I think we should recognize that, and that's where we're trying to deal with that, that we're creating more obligation on the general fund when it's supposed to be efforts that supplement, not supplant, the traditional budget. That said, Mr. Chair, I got to be honest. Representative Lencheski's amendment.
Representative McNamara, we've never questioned your honesty.
Well, thank you. Good. I'm glad for that. So, I think Representative Lencheski, I don't necessarily have a big problem with adopting your amendment because it keeps the discussion going forward. That what is the fair way to recognize the full cost of buying new land? We have opportunities. We can spend money on existing land that we own, and that doesn't have obligations, long-term obligations necessarily. We can buy easements where we leave the land in private land ownership, and they pay the taxes and maintenance and all that. Or if we buy new state land, historically, the state has taken on obligations, the long-term maintenance, management of that land, and the reality that if we go out and represent Marquardt's district and buy a land that folks say, you know what, this is marginal land, I've been having a tough time cropping it, I'm interested in selling it to the DNR, it's next to some land they already have, the public owns, but the reality is the township and local units of governments are getting some money from that local property tax owner that they're not now going to get in property taxes. But the reason we're buying the land is to protect it and maybe preserve, stop, hold back some water from getting in the Red River, causing flooding, maybe help the habitat if you guys get to visit it, do some bird watching, whatever the issue is. So that's what we're trying to do, and to have this discussion. So, Mr. Chair, I guess I would leave it up to Representative Lencheski. I understand she doesn't want us necessarily making PILT decisions. That's why, after talking with Chair Erdahl, we recommended in talking with you, Chair, that we moved it to your committee, and it's up to this body to decide what they want to do. But we need to have this discussion because the reality, if we're going to talk about buying land, let's recognize the true cost of buying land when you compare it with buying an easement or restoring existing land. It's only fair to the voters that said, you know what, I like the idea of going out and purchasing some more land. Well, let's be realistic. Let's recognize the whole cost of buying that land and say, you know what? If we're going to buy $8.4 million worth of land, let's say it's $10 million. Or let's go buy easements for $10 million. I think it's a fair discussion, Mr. Chair. So as far as the amendment, we just want to continue to have good discussion about being fair in the in what the real costs are.
Okay, Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, you know, just to address a few things. When you come from a county like mine, that's the third, I think it's the third largest county in the United States of America, east of the Mississippi, and 68% of it's publicly owned. You don't have very many people left to tax, and Representative Loeffler, I think you said that, I saw that legislative auditor's report too, and I can tell you that I don't know who gets more than they should, but I didn't agree with some of the parts of that report that said that the state is paying more than local property owners do. And, you know, you mentioned also, Representative Loeffler, about, you know, when we wanted a park, we went out and purchased it. We didn't want a park. We didn't want the Lake Vermilion State Park. And you, Representative Carlson, and a number of other people sitting at this table, Representative Knuth, who doesn't like state parks in greater Minnesota all of a sudden, you forced that state park on my constituency. You took 5,000 feet of Lake Vermilion property, and I think about 5,000 acres, off the tax roll and put it next to a state park that they can't function and maintain now. And now all of a sudden we're getting some great deal out there. Members and Representative Lincheski, I joined you. My legislative district voted overwhelmingly, 70% against the Clean Water Legacy, because I don't think anybody in this state would have voted for that if it was going to be, let's purchase land and make Minnesota first in the nation instead of second behind Alaska in state-owned land, public land. But now you've done it, and you're buying land all over. We don't want it. The counties oppose it sometimes. The counties are supposed to approve this, these purchases, and they come out there anyway, the DNR, and they do it. I mean, I can't fathom what's going on here, that there's a concern about this, that you put some money aside to pay the taxes that you just took off the tax rolls in counties that are 20, 30, 68 in my case, and up to 90% in Lake and Cook County, publicly owned. So I don't know what the argument is. I think, you know, that we have to put aside some money to pay for these costs. And frankly, you know, if you don't want to buy any more land, at least in St. Louis County, that's probably fine with 90% of the folks in St. Louis County. And Representative Carlson, you were wrong about that state park, too, I might have, sitting across from me looking at me.
Okay, members, just a little update here. We have another bill on the agenda. Again, not all members were here. 1633 is now, it's already on the House floor, so that's crossed off. We've got the omnibus tax policy bill. It would be my intention to vote on this before noon. We have room 200 for a half hour after session tonight for House File 1219. So that I have Drazkowski, Runbeck, Downey, Lincheski, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think Representative Ruckovina and Representative McNamara covered it pretty well. Members, we know we're continuing to accumulate liabilities by these land purchases. We own 8.5 million acres of land. This bill, if I remember correctly, will purchase another, I think, 10,000 acres of state land, about 2,000 acres that, incidentally, we're going to turn over to the federal government, which I think is another discussion for us to have, especially given the federal government's fiscal uncertainties, and are they going to be able to make their commitments to manage those lands. The reality is, members, we have these volunteer committees that are largely special interest groups that are lined up, and this is what they come out with for their definition of to protect, enhance, and restore is to buy more land. I don't know, in committee, Representative McNamara, I asked the question about out of the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Fund, how much of that money is being used for land purchases. It was phenomenal. I mean, it was 80% or something like that of the protect category was land purchases. So fundamentally, they're saying this is how we protect land, we buy more. The state owns 17% of land base in Minnesota, and the federal government owns another 8%. There's 25% controlled by government in Minnesota. We are continuing to buy more land with this bill, accumulate more liabilities that the legislative auditor's report says we can't afford to pay or haven't been keeping up with. This is a good approach. Representative Lincheski, I believe there are other bills that come through committee, and these provisions were put on not by the volunteer groups that bring recommendations to the legislature in these areas, but were put on in the Environment Committee as other tax provisions, I believe, are brought through bills and other committees that eventually do come before us for our analysis. Thank you.
Senator Runbeck?
Chair, and I just want to thank Representative Lincheski. I do support the amendment. There's a much bigger discussion we need to have about land off and on the tax rolls. And I want to put in a plug for the private landowner. I think they've been entirely lost in this discussion. Frankly, who takes care of land better? I'd submit it's the private landowner. And if counties can't afford to pay for the land, if they want more on the tax roll, let's start to sell some of it.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Rukavina, Draskowski, McNamara, and Runbeck have, I think, said it extremely well. I'm going to support the Lincheski Amendment because I do think this is a bigger discussion. And, you know, this raises the much bigger point, members. You know, people voted for this legacy amendment. If I remember right, I wasn't following politics super close back then, but you know, I think it took many, many sessions to load up this Christmas tree bright enough to get people to vote for it and to get it out of here. And it is absolutely no surprise that folks are going to try and load on more lights and more ornaments to this thing and find ways to use that little pot of gold that we've built down here. And, you know, we do this all over the place in state government. I mean, and I don't mean to draw us way out of zone here, but, you know, we got the Help America Vote Act, and the state blew through its $50 million federal appropriation and bought a bunch of technology and new voting equipment. And, you know, that stuff has like a 15% annual maintenance cost to it. Did we plan for any of that? No. And we're out. We're out of the $50 million's gone. Where's the, you know, the $5, $10 million every year going to come from to maintain all this stuff that we bought? And it's no surprise that we got a $5 billion deficit this year, and we got them in perpetuity. We keep on doing this, and we've got to exhibit some restraint here. And if we don't partition off a huge chunk of this legacy money to pay for the ongoing obligation of this land, man, we're going to have a serious, serious, serious problem 20 years from now. So I support the comments of my colleagues, and I support the Lincheski Amendment, and we just have to realize how big a temptation this stuff is for us legislators and be wary of it across the board, not just here with regard to land. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Downey. But what the chairs did kind of helps your argument. They are trying to have the state step up and pay for obligations that they've created.
Mr. Chair, I recognize that, and I am supporting the Lincheski Amendment simply because I think this is a much bigger issue, and if we don't deal with it more comprehensively, to think that this little tiny provision is going to fix the broader question of how we support literally hundreds of millions of dollars of land acquisition going forward, I think we need a more robust conversation and support sure. Chair Runbeck's discussion.
Okay, thank you, Representative Downey, for clarifying that. Representative Lincheski and then Rukavina.
Well, thank you,
Mr. Chair. Representative Lincheski, do you want to wrap up after Ruth?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to say, you know, members, would you be okay with the Clean Water Group coming forward to the Tax Committee and exempting all sales taxes on construction materials for state parks? I mean, there's all kinds of things that they can continue to dream up that are tax bills that don't belong in the Clean Water Legacy. They're going to meet, you know, every session and say this is what we should fund. They should not be writing tax policy. So I think no matter how you feel about this provision, I think Representative McNamara was right. It came here, and I think what this group should do with it is keep it here, remove it, that's what the amendment does, and allow this bill to move on, minus the pill provisions, and this discussion can continue. But there is a reason that when you read the tax accounts for Chair Runbeck and Chair Davids, that pill is in their possession. And I think it should reside in this committee and stay here, and we can have the debate about what we should do with PILT. But property tax relief, paid for. You know, Representative Downey's district, for example, pays a lot higher than 65%. That's just a metro-wide average. So this, you know, the PILT provision would have Representative Downey's constituents pay a much higher percentage than that, even, to give property tax relief up north. And I will just say to members, you know, this idea that those are obligations and costs when you buy land. Representative McNamara and Representative Erdahl are right. And when we do that in the metro, nobody gives us PILT. I was asking Representative Tilbury, you know, he has Springbrook Nature Center. I mean, he didn't get PILT when his citizens did that. Eden Prairie put it on the ballot. Bought a whole bunch of land. Nobody gave them PILT when they did that. I mean, people decide on their local counties and cities if they want to buy parkland, they eat those costs. And in the metro, no one comes in and gives you money for that. So I think this is a very broad tax policy. If the Clean Water Legacy Group, both unelected and not, start getting a green light that they can do tax policy, boy, imagine what's going to happen the next year and the next year and the next year. There's going to be a new tax provision every year, and I really hope we would just support this to continue the fight, but leave the tax provisions in the tax committee.
Okay, we're going to go Representative Rukavina Loon, then I'd like Representative Erdahl to wrap it up, or Representative McNamara. Well, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, first of all, Representative Lucheski, I kind of resent the statement up north. There's a lot of land being bought in other places, finally, and we don't want it bought. And it's the responsibility of the legislature. I changed the whether I was in the minority or the majority, when I was sitting on the LCCMR, I said it's our responsibility, not a bunch of citizens who got appointed, to decide how that money's spent. And last year, for the first time, I was successful in actually changing a purchase on the House floor, and we negotiated it in committee. There's a much bigger problem here. You're right. It's a bunch of, you know, Representative McNamara, you changed the LCCMR's bill. I guess a question to you, you know, you didn't like the cerebral approach to the purchase of land, and you changed the bill. Did you change this bill on the land purchases?
Representative McNamara?
When it came through your committee.
Representative Rukavina, or Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, the provision that would allow us to recognize when we buy land that there's other costs involved with buying land, I put on in Representative Erdahl's committee on the outdoor heritage, the Lessard Sam's outdoor heritage part, which is what you're looking at here, and the environment finance bill that passed off the House floor included the same provisions. With the LCCMR land purchases, we have this same language on the LCCMR land purchases, that the money be set aside, and we fully recognize that when we buy land there's other costs involved, so that we are being truthful up front. So yes, we did put the provisions on both, and it was changes from the original LCCMR recommendations and changes from the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council recommendations. They were done legislatively. They were not done by the Citizens Committee.
Mr. Chair, could Representative McNamara tell me what land purchases you changed in the Lessard Sam's recommendations?
Representative McNamara?
There's $28 million worth of state land purchases in this bill, and they are all increased by 20% to fully recognize that there needs to be money set aside in a fund to figure out how we're going to fully recognize those costs.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I appreciate the fact that you are trying to look at this big problem, but what I'm hearing from you is you really didn't change the bill. You changed the LCCMR bill, and maybe you didn't change the land purchases in the LCCMR bill, but you did change the LCCMR bill. So the cerebral approach got a little hacked, but the, you know, the hunters, fishers, the redneck approach is left alone. You know, and that's the whole issue. Representative Lincheski, if you wanted to go after the bill and say, no, my constituents didn't vote for the Clean Water Legacy Amendment to buy a bunch of land up north. We don't want the land bought up north. But if you're going to force us to take land off the tax rolls, then Representative McNamara's approach is correct. You know, if you folks want to vote on things down here, I wish, why don't we come, I'll tell you what, you want this 44-44-16 split, why don't we make it 100% of all the land purchases, you know, fee purchases have to be in the metro area. I'll vote for that right now. Let's do it.
take 100% every year of the money and buy, and you can hunt in powder horn and shoot whatever, bear or whatever. Shoot whoever you want. I don't care. I don't care. But to make this argument here when you're forcing all of this on rural Minnesota, and I'll tell you what, that committee isn't made up, that Lessard Sams, of a majority of rural Minnesotans. It's made up of metro people that want to come out and go hunting and fishing wherever they want. So buy 100% of the land. Buy all of Dakota County. Shakopee, the whole thing. I don't care. Do you care, Representative Erickson? No. So, what? You guys are jumping all over the place. You want to direct your attention, Representative Lachesky, to the real problem instead of built. Don't purchase the land in the first place. Let's take a bunch of this money, tell the Lessard Sams Council that we're in charge. We got the election certificates, and that we're going to put it into sewer and water plants, because pretty soon we aren't going to be able to go to the bathroom if the sulfate thing isn't solved that you think has to do with copper nickel mining. But I would suggest to the committee, buy stocks in those satellite toilets, because that's what we're all going to have to use pretty quick if you don't direct that your attention to that issue. We're talking hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, to address that sulfate issue, which 300 sewer plants in Minnesota are violating. So let's go after the real problem, which is citizens telling us how to spend our money and us just kind of sitting here scared because we don't really want to take anybody on but the cerebrals at the LCCMR, but not the hunters and fishers and Pine Martins or whoever else is giving the money away at the Lessard Sams Council. Instead, we'll pick on Pilt and make it a metro up north. I got up something all right.
Representative McNamara?
I'm voting no, by the way.
How are you going to vote?
I'm voting against her amendment.
Oh, okay. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did misspeak to Representative Rukavina's question. Actually, on the Lessard, or on the LCCMR, Representative Draskowski had an amendment to reduce the land purchases by $1.8 million, and that money was used to fund the 20% set-aside to recognize the full cost of land. So in the LCCMR bill, we did not take money from anything other. We reduced the amount of land purchases by an amount to cover, if I'm correct. Representative Draskowski, am I saying that right?
Representative Draskowski, if you could address that.
I think that's correct, Representative McNamara.
Okay, Representative Loon?
Mr. Chair?
You'll go after Representative
Loon. Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I don't know if this to direct this to Representative Lincheski and that. And I came in after this debate was kind of in full swing, so I apologize. I had to vote in another committee. But I guess I don't see the position of your amendment and the bill to be completely at odds here, or am I missing something, Representative Lincheski? Is it more kind of a jurisdictional issue and who should decide? But you don't necessarily have a disagreement with the policy of using some of the money to replace the loss of money going on to the tax rolls by the purchase of public lands. Is that correct?
Representative Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. That is correct. And, in fact, the discussion of a new formula or what people might want to do about should be decided by the tax committee. So, you know, I just think there's a very dangerous precedent here that if the Clean Water Group gets the green light on this, sales tax next year, income tax increase next year, who knows what, that group. And Representative Loon, to answer your question, was reading the Constitution on this issue, says that the Outdoor Heritage Fund may be spent only to restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. It doesn't say, and you must provide property tax relief for that. We've done that, and we should do that. And I've supported PILT. But the idea that this bill now should be a tax bill with no reflection on the report that Representative Loeffler has seen, and I think you've seen, Representative Loon, that said PILT is really not being applied across the state fairly. And I would strongly disagree with Representative Rukavina. There have absolutely been overpayments of PILT in different parts of the state and different sorts of PILT, and it's complicated and we won't go into it here. But the different kind of payments that are going on across the state are the tax committee's job to decide. And it is a mess, and this committee should decide it. Not just, in my estimation, it is jurisdictional. This is the place for that, and that bill can pass off the House floor all on its own without it. So,
Representative Loon.
Thank you.
Well, just thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Lencheski, because I, you know, I do think the direction that Chair Erdahl and McNamara have put into the bill is the right one to go, because there are consequences to these land purchases beyond just the purchase and upkeep of the land. That's pointing in this direction, but you know, you've put the question squarely before us as to who is to make those determinations. So, thank you,
Representative Blue. Representative Drazkowski, Loeffler, then we're going to go to Erdahl and we're going to vote. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, I'd just like to maybe just make people clear, help people become clear on what this amendment is and how it relates to the bill. There seems to be maybe some uncertainty. Members and Representative McNamara, help me, but I believe about the equivalent of 20% of each of the provisions in the bill that buy land, 20% is then funneled into this account, and from the account is paid the cost of managing and upkeeping the land and paying the pilt. Now, what Representative Lencheski's amendment does is just removes the payout of the pilt dollars from the fund, but everything else is still left completely intact. So from the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Fund dollars, there would still be the 20% appropriation to this fund and still would be the payout of the maintenance and management costs. So I would just suggest that not adopting this amendment and going forward with the bill as written, members, would not preclude us from coming back and taking a look at PILT, which if those questions are do exist about disparities between northern Minnesota and southern Minnesota, and I know some of those were outlined, Representative Loeffler, as you pointed out, in the Legislative Auditor's Report of 2010, that if there are those questions, this doesn't preclude us from coming back and not only looking at those disparities or maybe readjusting the formula for PILT for those purchases that come out of this bill, but also for all of the rest of the PILT in the state. Those can all be looked at as well. So I'd encourage a no vote on the amendment.
Representative Loeffler, then Erdahl. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I served on the Legacy Committee last time around, and I really enjoyed that experience. But we heard over and over again we don't have enough money to maintain or restore the existing state-owned land. And I think there's a lot of parties who are out there who want to see this as an opportunity to sell land, to use it for a variety of different purposes. But, I mean, if you know, I don't know that the PILT issue is necessarily should ever have been dealt with in this bill. I agree with Representative Lencheski. And I think that there needs to be some real debate about whether the acquisition of land was the real intention, particularly with its property tax consequences. And so I think we should pull this section out. I think there's plenty of time to address it in the future. If people don't want to sell, the county doesn't want to, or a township doesn't want to have their land sold, without this, they can make that feedback known to us before we act on the final legacy amendment, but I think and proposal in terms of the bill. But I do think we do need to deal with the PILT program, and this will just enlarge the problem potentially. So I support the Lencheski amendment.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Wardlow, briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, I support this amendment. Thank you, Representative Lencheski, for bringing it forward for the reasons others have discussed. But also, I think Representative Lencheski raised a very important point. There is at least a question as to whether or not this use of outdoor heritage funds for PILT is constitutional. And regardless of what we may think about the policy on either side, we do have to go by the plain language of the Constitution, and I am not convinced that this is constitutional, so I'll be voting for the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Wardle. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, for this spirited discussion. I get plural today. In talking with Representative McNamara, I mean, all we're trying to do with this is to keep options open to pay for land costs through the legacy amendment. No matter how the vote turns out on this today, we'll continue to work with the counties and work with others as this process goes on to try to get something that works for the legislature and also for the 1.6 million Minnesotans who think that this legacy amendment is important. I hope it's beyond that now. Those are the numbers who voted for it, and that we do what is right for the people of Minnesota.
Representative Rukavina?
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, listening to Representative Lucheski, Loeffler, Wardlow, Downey, maybe. Representative Lucheski, would you accept as a friendly amendment to your bill after December 31st, 2011, there will be a 10-year moratorium on land purchases by the Lessard-Sams Council on land outside the 7th County metro area? Put your money where your mouth is, all you metro legislators. Let's vote on it right now. I offer it up as an amendment to this amendment. Let's go. Oh. I'm offering that as an amendment to the amendment.
Lucheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you asked me directly, and can you repeat it? Because I might.
After December 31st, 2011, there will be a 10-year moratorium on land purchased by the Lessard-Sams Council on lands outside the 7th County metro area. You guys purchase it all. I offer it up. That's an amendment to the amendment.
Now, Mr.
Do you need
Michael,
the language, Ms. Dalton, or anybody?
If the Rukavina Amendment passed, would this have to go back to Environment Committee, in your opinion?
No.
Mr. Chairman, I suspect that's something you should ask the chair of that committee.
He's good, isn't he? Representative McNamara, if that passed, would you need to see it again?
I would imagine, Mr. Chair, we would have to have the bill back, and we would accommodate a schedule.
For that, members, for that reason, and I think Rukavina is onto something. I kind of like what he's doing, but I would respectfully say we have a no vote on this one, and we vote quickly. Representative, any other comments? Representative Lucheski?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in response to Representative Rukavina, you know, I think I could support that. And
good.
So,
take on the chair.
So I will, you know, I can vote for that. Representative Rukavina, I think you and I have the same problem. We have an unelected group of people making decisions. We never supported this process, and we're stuck with it. I'm just trying to keep the tax policy in this room. But I wish we didn't have a group who doesn't stand for election deciding what to do with public money, because there's no accountability in a scenario like that. So I hear what you're saying.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Lucheski, that Lessard-Sams Council makeup is statutory, not constitutional. You could do anything you want on this committee to change it. And I've been saying that about the when we made the LCC, the LCMR, the LCCMR. And yet nobody has the intestinal fortitude. Yeah, well, same thing.
Okay, and with that...
Mr. Chair, I would respectfully ask you to not vote against my amendment.
Representative Drazkowski, very briefly.
Mr. Chair, just encourage you to reconsider and support Representative Rukavina's fine amendment.
Let's hear. We got a big metro, Mr. Chair. We got a big metro rural Minnesota fight today, so I agree with all of them. Don't purchase any more land out there. We got more than enough.
I'd recommend a no vote, not because it's not fine policy, but because this needs to go to Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
It's going away. It goes back to...
The motion, the amendment to the amendment prevails. Members, we will recess till... I've got a few announcements first here. Keep everything in your folders that you still want. We'll need it for tonight. Room 200. We are in recess to a half hour after session here in room 200. Members, we are in recess. We'll call the House Tax Committee back to order. We have before us, we have House File 1061. And we are on the Lucheski Amendment as amended by the Rukavina Amendment. Any further discussion on that amendment at this point, Representative Lucheski?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have it in front of me anymore. And I know Ms. Dalton redrafted it so it actually made sense, you know, as opposed to the handwritten. But, Mr. Chair, you know, I was going to move to withdraw the amendment. We had a conversation on the floor, and I did with Representative Erdahl, and I know they were talking with Representative Rukavina. And just, you know, can you just, before I would make that motion, could you talk to me about kind of your intent going forward? I mean, I think the goal was still to try to hold the tax provisions in the committee.
It would be my intent, Representative Lucheski, that if you withdraw the amended amendment, that you would offer your original amendment back, and we would pass that out of here.
I would withdraw the amendment. Although I feel badly that Representative Rukavina isn't here. I don't know.
I don't. Representative Lincheski?
I'll withdraw the amended amendment.
The amended amendment. Okay, now you would like to, you have another amendment.
I would like to move my original handwritten amendment.
Okay, members, what we're going to do is take the original handwritten amendment, and we're going to work off that one again. So Representative Lincheski moves the original amendment. Representative Paymer? Okay. Could you please describe what the amendment does, and we will get it for Representative Paymar before we do any voting on anything.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I know people were in and out of the room, but I think Representative Loon actually described it best earlier, which is, you know, we all have opinions on what PILT should and shouldn't be used for, but it's just to keep the tax provisions here in the committee and send the bill out. So to have a discussion at a later time about how PILT should be appropriately worked through from the tax committee's perspective. So it just pulls those provisions out, and then the bill stands alone without them.
Further discussion? Hearing none, all fairs say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Are there other amendments? I'll renew my motion that House File 1061 as amended be recommended pass and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. Further discussion? Anyone from the audience that would wish to testify for the bill or with concerns? Okay, then we'll go to member questions, and then we'll have Representative Erdahl kind of wrap things up. We can have discussion with committee members now. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, my question is the distribution for the parks was laid over pending discussions, and apparently those discussions must still be underway, and it's the intent then that tomorrow at noon this bill will be up in Ways and Means, that if there's an agreement it would be taken care of there. Is that?
I will let Chairman Erdahl address the Carlson question. Chairman Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson. Yes, we have been working on this. Actually, I drove down to Chatfield and back to see the Sheet Music Museum and talked on the phone and worked this out. But we've had numerous conversations this afternoon, and this is my intent. And I believe that various lobbyists and representatives of the Metropolitan Council are in agreement with me. I will propose this as an amendment, that the division the first year, in other words this year, of the biennium will be 41-41-18. The LaSalle Lake project will come off the top at the same percentage, 41-41-18. In other words, of the $2.1 million, that's how it will be divided up amongst the three entities. The second year of the biennium, we will go back to what we'd proposed earlier at 40-40-20, and the 20% will be open to statewide grants. I think 80% will be for Greater Minnesota the same as it was last time. So that is what we have worked out with the Met Council folks, and what I will be moving to amend tomorrow.
So,
in Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman, essentially my question was, you know, whether if there was an agreement, and you say there is now an agreement, and then where that would be taken care of, and you're saying in Ways and Means tomorrow, and some of us are on that committee, so thank you.
Right.
Further questions? Representative Rukavina and Loeffler. Representative Rukavina?
Well, Mr. Chair, evidently, they got here a little bit late after you took all your members to the woodshed. I understand that, as we would say in polite range vernacular, did I get hosed when I was out of the room? Or?
Pretty much.
Okay. Wanted to know that. And I appreciate it, you know. I expect a little hugging and kissing maybe after the meeting, Mr. Chair, from you. But, you know, to sit here and listen to the conversation today, particularly given the fact that for the last 2 years, the newest state park, which was not wanted by the majority of people up in my area.
Talking about Greenleaf?
No, on the other one. Which took, as I said earlier today, 5,000 feet of lakeshore off Lake Vermilion, one of the most expensive per foot property tax lakes in the state, and 5,000 acres, I believe, and then to, watch the fight here with the Metro members about how they're not getting much. I really wish the Metro members would occasionally get out of the Metro area and go see the wonderful, vibrant economy we have in some rural parts of the state, which is sad with the consolidations in school districts, kids having to travel farther and farther to school. The whole fight between the parks issue and then this payment in lieu of taxes. Again, people shouldn't be hypocrites around this table. You want, and I'm looking at particularly certain few people, you want state lands, you want the state to own lands, then good, buy it in your 7-county metro area. Lynn, buy all the land you want. Open up hunting seasons. I don't care if they're on Norwegians or Swedes or who, but, to force this buying our lands and then not reimburse us so there's nothing left to tax in counties that have 60, 70, 80% public land ownership, it's embarrassing to see what went on here today. So,
Representative Kavina, I appreciate your comments. I don't think this issue is over. It's far from over. There's you bring up some very good points. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say my good friend Tommy Rukavina, who I office next to for several years and have developed a good friendship with. I did get out of the metro area, and that was the problem with Vermilion. I saw that pristine area, and it was in my view worth protecting, but Tommy and I have looked at maps going back at least 4 years, I think, dealing with Vermilion, and I understand where he comes at it from, but from my perspective, having gotten out of the metropolitan area, and I do frequently, it is a very pristine piece of property that was owned by U.S. Steel, and some of us thought it was a real target of opportunity, but there are some issues, as Representative Rukavina points out. I happen to think it was a good decision, but obviously he and I will probably debate that and look at maps for some time.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and since I'm not on Ways and Means, I just wanted to say for us people who are continuing to discuss this and are going to be deciding on things in the future, last term I was on the Legacy Committee, and I have both sympathy for Representative Rukavina and others who represent areas who have more public land than they have tax base and who are concerned about that, and they don't necessarily want additional public land bought. I'm also sympathetic to areas that are underserved and don't have a state park near them. But I must say that in the testimony that we had last year, I asked over and over again for us to develop mapping so we could see a map with all the state and regional parks and trails, because we had in the coalition that wanted to create the concept of Greater Minnesota Regional Parks counties that already had two state parks within them. And to me, that's not underserved areas. And if we just open it up to anyone who meets the not in the 7-county metro area, I think we will be disappointed that some areas will continue to be overserved or served more than average. Maybe there isn't such a thing as overserved. And other areas will continue to be unserved in terms of reasonably accessible facilities to enjoy nature. And so I would hope that as the discussions go forward, Representative Erdl, and I know you're a man who tries to listen to all sides, that you really look at that issue of narrowing the competitive money to areas that don't have a state park within their counties or that sort of thing, because I do think the first in line should be those corners of the state. A lot of them are agricultural, who just haven't been, that just didn't have those kind of things put together for whatever reason, and I don't know the history of the state enough to know why, but if we're going to talk about underserved areas, we ought to go first to the areas of the map that truly don't have the kind of investments that some parts of the state have. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions for members? Otherwise, Representative Riddle, I'll wrap it up and we'll vote her out of here.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to publicly thank Chairman Erdahl for agreeing to sit down and try to figure this out. I know it's not something any member relishes, is telling a chairman, we have concerns about a provision of your bill. We want you to go back and negotiate it. This is a tough issue to work on, and I just appreciate his willingness to work on this issue and try to bring greater resolution to it. So thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. And to think when I took this on, they said, oh, it'll be easy. All you've got to do is give away $550 million. But it hasn't. This was a prickly issue that we've been dealing with, still dealing with it. Trying to come up with a fair and equitable way, and that's been my goal through this whole thing. I'm from greater Minnesota. I mean, I would like to see a lot, more. Hey, I've got one of the counties that doesn't have a state park, Meeker County. But it was never my intent that I try to favor one side or the other in this park issue, but simply that we do what is necessary to get a bill passed through the legislature. And that's what I am trying to do. That's what this amendment that I will be offering tomorrow is all about. Let's go forward from this. I recognize the concerns raised by Representative Rukavina, I'm appreciative that Chair Davids is going to, and former Chair Lincheski, keep working on this issue of the PILT and the tax payments and the maintenance of this land. So I will look forward to seeing what happens with that. I do appreciate the spirited discussion today, and thank you for the opportunity to bring this before you.
I will renew my motion that House File 1061, as amended, be recommended, pass, and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Okay, item next, members. Thank you, Chair Erdahl. Oh, I went too fast. There was another Lincheski amendment.
That was good.
Okay, members, I'm going to move the HF 1219 amendment be recommended pass and sent to the General Register. Members, you have in your packet the A11-0445 amendment, which is the delete all, which puts the issues that the committee has heard up to this point. Is that correct, Mr. Michael? So that the bill is before us, Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay, so to get the bill in shape I would like it, I'll move the A11-0445 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now, I have, and Mr. Michael, just very briefly, we have heard this over two committee meetings now, I believe it is. Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. On Saturday, Friday and Thursday.
Okay. We have an amendment in your packet. Is Representative Bruce Anderson here? Oh, okay. Representative Gottwald has the A5 amendment, H1219A5. Representative Gottwald, could you please present the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Did you move it or should I move it?
Representative Gottwald moves it.
I'll move the A5 amendment. Members, this has actually been before the body in previous years. Horse owners want horses identified as livestock, and it's kind of interesting. As I talked with the people involved in this issue, some of the crazy rules we have around this, there is not clear definition in law right now that gives assessors correct direction in local units of government. horses are, in fact, livestock. A lot of, apparently for whatever reason, we've viewed them as kind of hobby farm material, but in fact they're about $1 billion. They're the third largest livestock group in the entire state of Minnesota. And these horse breeders are wanting some finality, some definition to this. And I was more than happy to bring this forward. My understanding is this does not have a fiscal note. There is no cost. It does not impact state taxes, and it does not impact Green Acres. So, with that, members, I'll ask for your support.
Let's go to see if there's any testifiers first. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of the Gottwald Amendment? Is there anyone that wishes to testify with concerns? If you could please join us. Welcome to the committee, gentlemen. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Matt Mossman with the Department of Revenue, and with me is John Hagan from the Department of Revenue. Welcome, we just want to testify a couple concerns and observations about the proposed amendment. In general, the agriculture classification and the preferential tax rate and tax treatment that goes along with that class rate for the property tax has historically been referred or been used for the production of livestock and feed or food for either consumption or sale products. And it is our interpretation in the way that the current property tax statutes are administered now, and it is our expectation of assessors in terms of how the property tax system is administered now that livestock that is raised, including horses, for resale is included in agriculture use, whether it be intensive or on the scale. And so that is how the ag classification system works now. The proposed amendment, we do have concerns in terms of whether or not, and just an observation as to whether or not it would become more difficult to distinguish for assessors under the proposed language that's proposed to be repealed on section 1.12, I believe it is, of the amendment. That helps make clear that if this definition were in agriculture statutes, that the definition would not in effect end up being used to lead to agriculture class definitions for property that might only have one horse on it or a couple horses. Frankly, that is our concern, that it's actually more clear in statutes the way it is now than it would be. And we do encourage assessors, and they should be giving the ag classification to anyone who is breeding and selling horses under current law, under current Chapter 273 statutes. So that is our concern, is that we would actually potentially be opening up the ag classification down the road for a broader purpose. And I'll have Mr. Hagan can testify more directly to assessors what the assessment practice is now for local governments.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, my name is John Hagan. I'm representing the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Hagan, like H-A-G-E-N?
That's correct.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing us to testify. As Mr. Mossman testified, we've had a lot of discussion on horses over the past few years. In fact, in January 15th of 2010, we completed a report to the legislature on the concerns over horses and their classification. And as everything else seems to circle back to it, had its origin with the Green Acres crisis, that occurred in 2008 when assessors went out and looked at properties and reviewed the different classification of properties in conjunction with the 2008 legislation separating the 2A and 2B lands, and they identified a bunch of properties that were they thought were classed improperly as agricultural. And some of them had horses, some of them were horse breeding operations. So at the request of the legislature, we did provide a report to the legislature that was given to the legislature January 15th of 2010. We then issued a specific letter to assessors on June 15th of 2010. And to the best of my knowledge, a lot of these problems had gone away. We had not heard any problems on classification of agricultural properties with respect to horses in the interim since that time. When we had the report, we met with a great deal of stakeholders. We met with stakeholders from the Minnesota Horse Council, Allison Eklund, Mark Ward, who was president of the Minnesota Horse Council, Tom Tweet in the Minnesota Horse Council, all manner of people, Tom Peterson, Chris Raddatz, Dan Ramberg, a whole bunch of stakeholders within the horse community, and they agreed on the legislation. And some of you, I'm sure, were sitting in committee when we presented the report to the legislature, and it was sort of a shared report between us and the Horse Association. Everybody was quite happy with it at the time. I certainly echo Mr. Mossman's concern that by not linking it, in if you want to make horses agricultural for purposes of the agricultural classification, that certainly is fine with the department. Our concern is when it starts to eliminate the non-applicability. My concern, I should say, is when we separate the non-applicability provision in statute right now that says the changes in the agricultural statute should not apply to Minnesota Statute 273, which opens the door for agricultural classification for, as Mr. Mossman said, one or two horses, and greatly expands the potential of creating where hobby farms, a great deal of hobby farms, would become agricultural.
Just one couple final Mr. points, Mossman. Mr. Chairman, and then we'd be happy to take any questions. You know, certainly, you know, the legislature sets property tax policy and property tax policy around what is and is not ag classification. And so, you know, what we're hoping to bring to you today is just kind of a from a tax policy standpoint, the observation that with regard to what it is you really want to have ag class and whether or not this legislation or proposed amendment would make it more or less clear. And our concern is just from our professional expertise and practice in working with assessors, our concern is that this would make it more opaque in terms of what the expectation is on ag classification around horse farms. And then one final point on the fiscal note, I would just say that our staff, one of the reasons there's not a revenue estimate on this bill is that the language just came before us. We were just made aware of it this morning, and so there's not a revenue estimate because we haven't been asked to complete one at this point. I don't want to speak for our property tax research department before they've done the analysis, but I do think that there would be the potential for a revenue estimate on the property tax refund program due to some shifting of property tax levies if this were estimated.
Mr. Michael, this issue has been around a long time. Has there ever been a revenue estimate on this issue before? What would the state cost be?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that there has been in the past when this has come up, I think that there have been estimates done, and the cost comes from if you have land that's currently classified as commercial that shifts into the ag class, the tax capacity of that land drops, and that means that the levy must, you know, get spread to other properties, some of which include homeowners who claim property tax refund, and so they claim a larger property tax refund.
Thank you. Chair Gottwald?
You know, it's interesting. This is House File 529, I believe, so it's been around for a little while. And I happen to know that Representative Anderson actually asked about what the concerns were and wasn't given much of an answer today. So it's a bit of a Shanghai, I think. But Subdivision 2 actually defines in the bill, members, if you look at 1.5 to 1.9, there's a fair amount of definition. And I didn't bring it with me, but I was shared a photo by some of the people who support this approach of what every one of you would look at and say is a large farm. It was a large farm defined with a feedlot, with horses on it, and the local unit of government, because it did not have this kind of direction that you see in Subdivision 2, classified it as residential. And every building on that, including the outbuildings and the square footage of the feedlot, that was all taxed as residential. And they used it as an illustration of how little direction there is under this right now for those people who breed horses or raise horses. They are, in fact, livestock. Again, $1 billion a year, third largest livestock group we've got in the entire state of Minnesota. And just a little surprised that some of these concerns are coming forward. And I wasn't exactly sure that there was a deep concern other than the definition, perhaps. And I don't think we have anything conclusive on whether it actually costs money or not.
Okay, other questions? Mr. Hagan, you said that there were some changes made previously and that a lot of the problem seems to have gone away. Apparently not all of them. Maybe this is for Mr. Gottwald. Are you aware of what county or what jurisdiction we're having problems with?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I could not specify where that particular property was. I apologize. I wish I had that in front of me. But in talking with three of the proponents of this, there are clearly some frustrations yet around this. So I don't know who you worked with and what you may have accomplished in the past, but there was a clear desire on their part to see this legislation come forward yet this session. So,
okay, thank you. Representative Marquardt?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Representative Runbeck, was House File 569 heard in Property Tax Division?
Representative Runbeck?
Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, we did not hear it in committee.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess in response to Representative Gottwald and defending the Department of Revenue a little bit here, when you talk about issues and concerns coming up, I mean, this bill wasn't even heard. And that's the thing when we kind of fly by the seat of our pants and we bring up amendments that weren't even heard is that you're asking, and I'm sure Representative Anderson probably asked the Department of Revenue something today, but today, I mean, there's a million things going on when it could have got a proper vetting in the division. And, you know, I know there's, it sounds like there's one concern here. And I know when people's property taxes went up a year or two ago, everyone was blaming the Green Acres changes when, in fact, and Mr. Hagan can attest to that, had nothing to do with the Green Acres changes. And so I guess the point being here is this is something that really, I mean, we've dealt with this horse situation for a number of years. And it's somewhat confusing even to me on what's being repealed and all of these things. I just, you know, this really should be discussed in the property tax division. But I guess if I could just get a little more clarification from Mr. Mossman or Mr. Hagan. Right now, is horse breeding farms and that, is that considered ag that would get the preferential class rate treatment of 0.5?
Mr. Hagan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, yes it is. Horse breeding is considered agricultural. In our June 15th directive to assessors, we identified a number of uses where horse boarding is used agricultural, as long as there's a product for sale. And one of the compromises we made with the horse people when we were working on the study is reasonably enough, we concluded that a pasture land, if they had sort of a throughput where the horses being boarded were pastured there instead of buying hay or pasture land, that was a product for sale, and that would allow horse boarding, certainly horse breeding, activities like that to be agricultural.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Mr. Mossman, to the first Marquardt question. Representative Marquardt, you still have the floor. Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair, I did just want to respond both to Mr. Marquardt's point and to Representative Gottwald's point. You know, Representative Gottwald raises a good point, and I did call Representative Anderson's office this morning when I became aware of the amendment and talked to his staff. I didn't get a chance to talk to him, so it hadn't been heard in Texas before, so it is my preference and ideal, obviously, to have an opportunity to talk to the author, and we'll circle back with Representative Anderson.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last year, Representative Detmer had a bill, or 2 years ago. What did that deal with? Either one of, or Mr. Hagan, do you remember what that was? That had to do with,
and I think Representative Emmer had,
no, I know. And I thought it kind of dealt with this.
Or was that Emmer?
Well, Representative Emmer had a bill, but then last year I think we actually heard one on Representative Detmer had one too. And well,
Mr. Hagan, are you aware of what Representative Marquardt's talking about her?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, I do recall Representative Emmer had a bill that identified, and this was before the study, I believe, or before the, I believe it was before the study. My memory fails me some, but Representative Emmer did have a bill that declared horses were livestock, and that is, in fact, the bill that is before you at the current time. And at the same time, when it got to the Senate, Senator Scoid put on the provision or the non-applicability clause saying that changes made to the definition within the agricultural statute did not apply to property taxes, a 273 amendment that this bill is repealing.
Okay. And Mr. Gagas, final question. So you're, Mr. Hagan or Mr. Mossman, your main concern with this is that you could have this language would open things up to possibly someone that could have two or three horses that now would get this agricultural preference. And I guess, you know, and even in maybe asking the author, it doesn't sound like that's the situation that is the concern. And so, you know, that's why, I mean, I think we should address that concern, but not open it up to other things. And I think it just, first of all, is that correct, that it could open it up to
Mr. Hagan,
potentially in your view?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, from reading the language and based on my professional experience, I believe it would lead to a lot of questions and a probable expansion of the classification.
Representative Marquardt?
Thank you, Mr. Hagan. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think what this amendment is, we're actually maybe, or we're trying to make things simpler for assessors, and many of the kind of complaints we get from residents has to do with interpretations by assessors, let's face it. And I think this now is going to add to that complexity and that confusion and more phone calls. And I guess Representative Gottwald, and working with Representative Anderson, I'd like to see this worked out so we could really zero in on the concern that is the constituent of Mr. Anderson's without potentially opening this up to something we really don't want. And so I don't know what you'd feel about that, Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Hagan, how does this language open it up? It looks like it clarifies it. How does it open it up? Or Mr. Moss?
Mr. Chair, if I could start by fielding that one. I think the challenge here, and it really is, you know, we're trying to bring observations before for the legislature and this committee to consider. Our concern, some livestock is more likely to be both the potential for resale and agriculture as well as for hobby. For whatever the reason, cows and swine and some other forms of agriculture operation are less likely to be hobby operations. And so the language, we think, adds clarity by making clear that in the case of horse farming, because it is absolutely our professional opinion that horse farms, that are where horses are being raised as agriculture commodities for resale, that they be treated as an agriculture activity. But because horses are also much more common or likely to be a hobby activity, that this here is relevant language to adding clarification to make sure that that line is more clear in that situation.
But Mr. Mossman, with the amendment, where does it open this up for hobby farmers? I just see breeding farms, training farms, boarding farms. How are we opening it up?
Our concern, Mr. Chairman, is primarily with the repeal of the language on line 1.12,
okay,
which is the repealer of language that's in existing law that would, and I believe the language says that this section does not apply to the treatment of land used for raising horses under Chapter 273, which means under Chapter 273, assessors would continue to be available to make the interpretations that they do under Chapter 273 for any livestock, that when that livestock is an agriculture operation, they would give it an agriculture classification. So that's our concern with the language here.
Representative Gottwald?
Mr. Chair, just a couple of thoughts. I mean, we just walked through Chapter 273, and I'm still not understanding, especially in light of Subdivision 2. If you read the detail in Subdivision 2 and what it describes, I'm not sure how that loosens it up. And my other concern is, I recognize this is new for you gentlemen, perhaps. You haven't had a chance to look at this before, new administration and all that. But this bill, this issue has actually been around the legislature for a while. So You know, this is not a new thing to the legislature. This proposal really hasn't changed substantively. I think most members here have probably heard this before. But I too, Mr. Chair, am a little bit puzzled about how this opens it up. In fact, with the definition in Subdivision 2, I think it's absolutely clear what this applies to and what it doesn't apply to. Yeah, even with the repealer, I think you walked through it and gave us some good background on that. But the detail here, I think, is sufficient to actually help assessors. I would think if I'm an assessor looking at this, it becomes much clearer to me that for horse breeding farms, horse training farms, horse boarding farms, or farms combining these purposes, an intensive agricultural use may be accomplished on limited acreage, and that they're necessary for, you know, feeding, safety, and overall condition of the animals. It really does provide some definition to that whole area of agriculture in terms of livestock raising. So I mean, members, I don't have a big horse in this race, but. But I do think this is an appropriate amendment, and again, I'd encourage your support.
Okay, let's hear from. We have a gentleman that's traveled in from Owatonna, Mr. Bill Efforts. If you could please state your name, who you represent for the record, please, sir, and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bill Efforts. I'm the Steele County Assessor, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. And I guess I don't have a lot to add with the department. I would like to echo their concerns. I personally did get to serve on the study that Mr. Hagan referenced, and we thought that that report did clarify a lot of issues for us. We appreciate the efforts the department is making, working with the association and assessors statewide to provide uniformity and assessment consistency, you know, throughout the state. And we feel that with that report and with the current department direction, is that we finally did have some clarity on how to deal with these. We feel that the ambiguity or the problems may arise is when we talk about what intensive use is or what limited acreage is. I've been with the Steele County Assessor's Office for 3 weeks now. Prior to that, I was with Assistant County Assessor in Hennepin County. And we always had a tough time deciding the difference between agricultural use properties and what residential or recreational use properties were. So now when we talk about more limited acreage, we're afraid of expanding that agricultural classification.
Well, Mr. Efforts, we'd like to thank you for your efforts. But if you could... Oh. I had a... Gottwald. I'm sorry. Doesn't this clarify it for you? Doesn't this make your life easier?
I would say that my, I guess, I don't know, but from my reading of the and talking to other assessors around the state, is that this would open it up to any and all uses. Right now, horses used for competition, for racing, and recreational uses are not considered agricultural. We feel that this bill, any type of residential or recreational use property, this could possibly open it up for agricultural classification.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Efforts, with due respect to your 3 months in Steele County and your time in Hennepin County, if you look at the language in the bill, this spells out in detail what are clearly agricultural uses. This isn't hobby farm stuff we're talking about here, and the stories that I heard from these people today indicate that there are still some concerns and some misinterpretations going on out there. And it'd be interesting to hear from some county assessors and maybe some more rural areas, but this doesn't take away from what you did in your work in that group. What you put in statute, as I understand, is still there. We're not removing that. What we're doing is adding more definition to what is an agricultural use for those who own horses as livestock. And so I would think, not being an assessor myself, but I'm looking at this as more detail, not less, and greater clarity than more ambiguity. And clearly this was felt by the people bringing this bill forward, that this would help them with some of the property mishaps that have been going on in some of the counties where they have property.
Okay, question I have about Representative Laughlin and Representative Marquardt. Representative Laughlin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that I don't think there's any disagreement that for a legitimately operating horse breeding business that has a lot of sales and a lot of horses and boards a lot of horses, you know, that should qualify. I think the gray area and the area that I'm hearing the assessors raise, which is very prominent in many parts of suburban Hennepin County, is that you have people who have two horses, and they may have two kids, and they might actually add a third stall to bring in a little money to pay for the hay, and they might just try and argue with their assessor that they are a horse training farm because they are training these farms, these horses, and that they are also a horse boarding farm, and even though they're doing it all on 5 acres, it's okay because it's on limited acreage, and that is not an unusual circumstance in the inner metro area. And so I think that's not your intent, but I think that's the issues it would raise, and I don't know that we should legislate based on one problem in one area, but if we're going to do it, then I think we need to talk about scale, and you have to have sold X number of horses a year, you have to have a boarding operation that's of a certain scale. I mean, there are ways to define a business versus a recreational hobby, but I think knowing how much people appeal their properties and look for every tax break you could get, I think the assessors of my county will find a lot of creative people who will try and fit within these definitions whenever they could.
Okay, thank you, Representative Laughlin. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, what I'm hearing from the testifiers is mainly the concerns over line 1.12, which is the repealer. And I guess I'd ask Representative Gott, well, what is your purpose for the repealer part in this bill? And do you need that? Because I think, you know, things are being explained, you know, up here pretty good, but then you've got the repealer in there, and it seems to me that is what really is causing most of the testifiers the problem right now. So I guess if that's something that you need in that amendment? Or
Representative Gottwald?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, there's actually supposed to be a testifier here to talk to exactly that issue, and they're not. And so I can't explain to you exactly why the repealer is in there. I don't know if it doesn't jibe well with the additional detail in the language here. And without knowing more about it, I don't know, I wouldn't feel comfortable ripping it out. It might conflict with the other language in the bill. Perhaps if I could ask Mr. Mossman or Mr. Hagen, explain to me again why the repealer portion of this is a challenge for you.
And Representative Marquardt still has the floor, but
I'm sorry.
No. I want to. My question was going to be to the Marquardt question: what if the repealer part was not in there? What would the effect be on the bill?
Right.
But
yeah, that's good point.
Mr. Mossman?
Well, I think, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Gottwald and Mr. Hagen may want to supplement as well. But, you know, I think we are partly trying to understand what is the intent of the legislature in terms of if it's not for changing the classification of some properties, what would be the purpose of repealing the cross-reference here. You know, the incentive, there's a significant incentive here, right? The class rate for agricultural property is half of what it is for residential property. And so, and that's really kind of what we're trying to bring before the committee, that if there's, you know, if there's not compliance at the level there should be now with assessors, we would be happy to work with assessors and all interested parties to make sure that the proper classification is being given to horse breeding operations and agriculture operations, but there's a significant incentive to for the other side of this to happen also to over time for there to be more and more properties that would want to seek through a lower and lower threshold of agriculture activity ag class designation. As far as the repealer here, we have to remember also one of the main concerns, I think, is that this is agriculture statutes. And while we like to be as thorough as possible always in the Department of Revenue, we don't always look at agriculture statutes when we're administering the property tax code. And so it's one of the things that's kind of is a concern for us is that we would have some definition here in agriculture statutes that would be used to make the case at the local level as to what ag designation should be, and over time it would get there would be less of a link to the property tax statutes of 273 without this language being here to make clear that this is a definition for Department of Agriculture purposes and not a definition for Department of Revenue property tax purposes.
Representative Marquardt?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think most of us on this committee know that we've dealt with this Green Acres issue for about the last 2 or 3 years, and you know, one of the comments and one of the reasons I voted against the Green Acres changes because I still thought we didn't address the auditors or the Office of Legislative Auditors report, and that we just have people coming back and back and back again and never solve this issue. And I think even with this horse breeding, when I thought we kind of had reached some sort of a compromise, and I'm just really leery of, based on one situation here that we don't know for sure exactly what is the intent. Maybe could be solved by just the assessor getting, I mean, we really don't know what the situation is here. Do we really want to put in some new legislation that could really, you know, let the horses out of the barn? And so but I mean, that's in seriousness. I just especially when it's an amendment, and we just really haven't had a really good chance. It may be something that ultimately I could support, and we'd feel pretty good about it if we really understood this a little bit more. But I, members, I'm just a little cautious on moving ahead with this.
Further discussion, Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Gottwald. I think you should know that the folks who are here have actually been here for years and have worked on it for years, and they worked when Governor Plenty, this was Mr. Hagan, worked there. So same people, and they're very familiar with it. And I think the concern in taxes has been when the Ag Committee wanted to make an ag definition change, that was just fine. And people started doing this a long time ago, but they wanted this, they didn't want the thing that you've now got in here, line 1.12, which basically says the link there is, and then you can get property tax benefits for changing the definition. And so it had been said bipartisanly by, you know, when Representative Marquardt was a property tax chair and Republicans were, you know, as long as you're not going to use this to get tax cuts, which makes it a tax issue, you know, if you leave that, that they're not linked, then you can go off and do this in ag. And this is not the ag committee, this is the tax committee, and it's, you know, now it's delinking it again in your amendment. And I think one way to think about this is if the word dogs was put in here, I think members would kind of get this a little better. If you had a, if you got to pay half the taxes and shift your tax burden onto everyone else, if you're a dog breeder and you run dog schools and you have dog training and dog, you know, then people might say this is a business that we want to give a tax cut to and everyone else can pick up. Then people might say this is a business that we want to give a tax cut to and everyone else can pick up their taxes. But if people have two dogs or three dogs, should they get it? Because they're homeowners who happen to have dogs. And this is the problem when you repeal the link. The repealing language, that makes it clear that there is no intent then to go off and shift the property tax burden so that legitimate businesses doing this get this benefit. And that is, and I think what the department's telling you is they get it now. So, you know, I remember a number of people trying this in, on both sides of the aisle, and really it's usually driven by an individual. The reason they want a new sort of nuanced definition is they want to shift their property taxes onto somebody else. And they right now they can if they're a legitimate business. And so that, I mean, you know, someone can correct me if that's the wrong description, but I think if you just think about it in dogs, would we want Lyndon Carlson to get a tax break and shift his taxes onto his next-door neighbor because he has two dogs? Versus if he was a business that trained and bred dogs. That's just a very kind of a different definition, and I think that's the concern. I see Representative Biskin's up there, and I used to always ask the question, is Racino in here? And it's not. But, I mean, I just think there's a lot of... there's oh, Mr. Chair, it makes it germane.
It's coming.
Ooh, ooh. So now the policy bill would be, Racina would be germane. Anyway, I hope you can just hear it, Representative Gottwalt, for what it's worth. You can, you know, everyone can disagree, but I think that's the concern people are trying to get around. And those of us who live in the metro, you know, we know people. You know, I have a good friend who lives in Prior Lake who has a couple horses. I mean, should she get to cut her taxes in half? I mean, she and her daughter have horses. They have two. I think they're getting a third.
Representative Gottwalt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just point out, I don't think, you know, horses are livestock. I don't think we have $1 billion worth of dogs. I don't think we have some of the situations that were described to me by the supporters of this bill. And, you know, I mean, again, the language, horse breeding farms, horse training farms, horse boarding farms, farms combining those purposes. I do wonder, and I don't know if our testifiers can describe this, when we say farm, is there a definition in law about what a farm is?
Mr. Hagan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwalt, to my knowledge, there is not. And that I think you're getting at, and Representative Lencheski was getting at the heart of our concerns, is with respect to horse boarding farms, if it meets certain standards, it's already agricultural. Horse breeding is agricultural if it has substantial enough. Horse training farms, we've gotten statute horse training done in conjunction with boarding or breeding is agricultural. But our concern is that if you have just horse training farm, what is that? What is horse training? Is that two horses? Is that three horses? At what level is that? And certainly, if the desire of the legislators is to expand the ag definition or the ag classification, our job is to implement those changes. But I want to make certain that you're aware of the expansion that would take place if you do this.
Representative Gottwalt. Representative Jaskowski.
Mr. Chair, just to that point of Representative Gottwalt and the definition of farms, I believe
that point. You have the floor.
Oh, thank you. Well, I believe that the federal government suggests that a farm is an operation that is $1,000 or more of Schedule F income.
Okay, further discussion? Anyone else who would like to testify for the Gottwalt Amendment or with concerns? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Gottwalt, and thank you, Mr. Mossman Hagan. I can see it coming. Giddy up. Okay. We have another amendment. I believe the Rukavina amendment. If the pages could please pass out the Rukavina amendment. Members, it's the A92 or 9A2 amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Rukavina.
First of all, I was just observing if horses' behinds were a tax break, I could get a lot of my taxes cut. But, you know, that's a whole other issue. But anyway, I'm being dressed housekeeper for sure.
That'd be earning income credit for you.
Mr. Chair, members, the A2 amendment deals with kind of a peculiar situation. A couple of years ago, I don't know who asked, maybe it was Representative Lencheski or someone wanted the Department of Revenue to do a study on public charities and tax exemptions, and as a result of it, all of a sudden, the county fairs in St. Louis County were told they have to pay property taxes. I think this is Representative Moline's bill, and... I think the Department of Revenue supports it, but I was told that anyhow. They figured that this was a way to solve the problem. Members, we have a North St. Louis County Fair at Iron World, which the land is partially on tax forfeited and partially on IRRRB owned land. And in Proctor, we have the South St. Louis County Fair, about 70 miles away, which the land is on partially on county tax forfeit and the city of Duluth land. And then we have two regional fairs, the Embarrass County Fair in the township next to me and the Floodwood Fair, which are also on tax forfeited land, and because they're not on land that's owned. And if you see, all the other counties have a county agricultural society that runs their county fairs. And so this corrects the problem because we're the only fairs that are county or regional fairs that are being taxed right now under this
what the Department of Revenue ran into. So I don't know if Mr. Mossman or someone.
Is there anyone that would wish to testify on behalf of supporting the Rukavina Amendment? Is there anyone that wishes to testify with concerns on this issue? Is there anyone that really cares about this issue?
Just the
I do.
Yeah. I, you know.
Representative Rukavina moves the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Okay, item next. Are there any other amendments? Are there any other amendments? Otherwise, we'll have third reading. Oh, Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Patrick, I have the A3. I'd like to move the A3.
I got it.
Okay, let's get the A3 passed out, please.
It saves lives.
Is there, Representative Lincheski, this raises revenues?
It does, Mr. Chair. And if I could, I just want to move it and talk about it. I'm open to withdrawing it. But
Certainly. Representative Lincheski moves the H1219A3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Representative Loon's bill. And I guess, you know, when we had the hearing, I thought we had a really bipartisan discussion. And I just thought maybe we could think about this as a group. I think there's not everybody on this side of the table would vote for this. And I don't think everybody on your side would vote for it. But I think it would pass if we had a roll call. And I was hoping we could just talk about it a minute. You know, there's a really serious public health issue that Representative Loon is addressing in her bill. And you know, I just wonder how, I mean, I know we can't raise taxes in this committee this year. Mr. Chair, you've made that very clear. And your majority isn't going to raise any taxes. And I think everybody's trying to respect the policy bill. You're trying to make it non-controversial, I think. So I wanted to hear a little bit about that. And you're not cutting taxes either. So I think you're trying to bring in, my guess is, a zero spreadsheet so that you can just go along your way. I mean, the problem here becomes, and maybe Mr. Michael could advise, is there a way to draft Representative Loon's bill that it doesn't raise money? I mean, the fact that it happens to raise revenue is incidental to the purpose of the bill. You know, when you pass a cigarette tax increase, you know, you are doing a couple things. You're trying to address public health, you're trying to reduce smoking, you're trying to raise some revenue to run the government. The bill that's been introduced by Representative Loon and others in the past, you know, the authors and the advocates are not trying to raise revenue. It's really not what they're about. It happens to, kind of by accident, raise a little bit of revenue. And I wonder, you know, how will, since we're bound here, how will we ever deal with a policy item like this if it didn't qualify for the tax omnibus bill? And now, if it doesn't qualify here, I mean, how do we ever do the business of trying to change a policy that affects taxes, this definition, when the intent is not to raise revenue, but it happens by accident? Do you have any thoughts on how we might do this? Because I think you'd see bipartisanly people have an interest in this.
Thank you, Representative Lincheski. Mr. Michael, to the Lincheski question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincheski, I think somehow this would have to be restructured to reduce tobacco products tax to offset the increased revenue from taxing little cigars as cigarettes. Taxing them as the heavier little cigars as light cigarettes would reduce some of the revenue, but you'd have to work with revenue to figure out a way to make this revenue neutral. It's not, I don't think you could do it here.
And you still have the floor, Representative Lincheski, but Mr. Michael, did you come up with a definition of refuse scraps? I can't recall. Representative Lincheski still has the floor. Then we'll go to Representative Loon. Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, I only wanted to ask Representative Loon her thoughts on this because I think, you know, if we're going to be extremely ideological here, then we can never do this. And maybe we can't do it this year. But I'd like to hear maybe Representative Loon has thought about how do you do a public health initiative that is in the tax committee and somehow get around the constraints, you know, because I don't believe Representative Loon's trying to raise revenue in this bill. So that was only my question to Representative Loon.
Representative Loon to the Lincheski question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lincheski. No, it is not my intent to raise revenue through this proposal. You're right. My intent is really to try to honestly discourage kids from getting into smoking, and I didn't belabor it when we had the committee hearing on this issue. I mean, you know, it's affected me very personally. My father started smoking when he was about 14, 15 years old, and he was dead at age 45. So, you know, I just think whatever we can do to try to address an issue where we've got new products that have come on the market who have found a way to classify themselves as cigars and not be subject to the cigarette tax, but when you saw the examples in committee, they are cigarettes, except that the color of the paper is different. And but, you know, we do have this revenue issue, and I don't know, honestly, how to address that either. You know, there is money. I guess you could talk about putting it somewhere else, or if you wanted to address the fees, you know, on other products. I don't know that that's the ideal way, because Mr. Michael's correct. Some of the larger little cigars and that, the tax on those products actually would drop a little bit right now because of the weight and the way they're currently taxed. So, but evening all that out, the revenue note does produce, I don't know, maybe a couple $1 million. So I don't have any brilliant ideas for addressing that. I'm sorry.
Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to withdraw it. I just hope that before the end of the year here, you know, maybe that, you know, I don't know if you're structuring this to not go to Ways and Means. You know, maybe if you're open to it and you can work with Representative Loon and others. I mean, I just hate to see a million or two of accidental revenue stop this. And I don't have an idea either. But I think we've gotten in this situation now that if it raises a nickel, we can't do it. And maybe everyone can just put their heads around that between now and the time this is on the floor, because this would be a place for this bill to sit if we could get the money out of it somehow. And I just wanted to bring it up just so people could think about it. So I'll withdraw it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lincheski. Representative Lincheski withdraws the three-minute. But to that amendment, just a second. Representative Michael, Mr. Michael, do you know on line 1.21 what Cavendish is? Is that like a color or something?
You don't know what a Cavendish is?
Huh. I defer to Representative Gaff.
Okay. I don't smoke.
Chair?
I don't know these things.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Loeffler?
But I think, Mr. Chair, that's an excellent example of how maybe what we have to do is take ownership of our own laws. And to me, it's about interpreting and our definitions holding. And I mean, when I saw those products, to me, they were cigarettes. I mean, just because you add a little tobacco juice in so it looks brown instead of white, that doesn't change it in terms of size and use. And we could define a cigarette as anything that is consumed in normal use in less than 5 minutes. You know, I mean, it's, you know, or 10 or 15. I haven't smoked, so I don't know how long a cigarette lasts. But, you know, I mean, if we don't know what some of the other things are in here, then the companies can come up with another product, and they can call it a Cheroot or a Cavendish and market it as a Cavendish. And once again, we've got another sort of abuse of our tax code intent. And so to me, I think we need to own this. And just because they call it a cigar, maybe we just need to clarify our definitions of what is a cigar and what is a cigarette, because to me then it's a matter of having clear definitions in law, and that might be another approach.
Any other comments on the amendment that's not before us?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I
Representative Biskins has the floor, and then Carlson. Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would agree 100% with taking ownership of our own laws, and we have a law right now which says that minors can't use tobacco, can't purchase, can't use. All right. So if we are truly taking ownership of our laws, and our laws say that they can't use them, the only purpose for raising this tax would be to raise tax on adults. And, you know, if we're truly taking ownership of our own laws, then let's be honest about this. All right? We're raising taxes on adults, and it's a tax that is very regressive and hits the poorer adults much harder than wealthy adults. So it's not going to change the legality of the tobacco product use. It's against the law. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson, then we'll go to the next amendment. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I view this as a health-related issue. I was quite interested in the testimony the other day, but the only point I want to make, and I know the amendment's withdrawn, but there are bills going through the legislature that are raising revenue. There will be two up tomorrow night in Ways and Means. I haven't had a chance to look at the bills. I'll be doing that tonight, but I do know that there are two bills that have fee increases that will be before Ways and Means tomorrow night. In fact, Representative Lincheski, you may want to look at that relative to your tax hat. I'm assuming that the bottom line is a revenue increase. I'll have to look at the bills. But the point is that, you know, at some point you want to establish good policy, and I don't think that we should get so hung up on something that when you look at the entire state budget and all the revenue that comes in off of cigarettes that we can't address a health issue. And I don't know if it's caught up. I know you asked Representative Lincheski if staff had another term that might use. I remember the debate with the former governor about the health impact fee and whether that was a tax or not. But I can't imagine that there isn't something that could be done to address the health concerns with the Loon bill and now recently the Lincheski amendment.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Are there any other amendments to House File 1219? Is there any further discussion to House File 1219 as amended from the audience with concerns or supporting it? Okay, I will renew my motion that House File 1219 as amended be recommended pass and sent to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. The next meeting will be at the, you will be notified, call the chair. With that, members, thank you for your work today and previous days and what you're going to be doing the next 2 weeks. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.